think of others as board members, others as councillors. Good morning, everybody. Honourable members, I think from next term, which is the second term of this year, we'll have to go back to our 9:30 because usually our meeting starts at 9:30. It's 10 o'clock, I think it deals with us towards lunch and the National Assembly. So we'll have to revert back to our time. Today we are going to first get a briefing from our legal services, Parliament legal services, on the ICASA matter, Mr. Mhlaloga's matter. And thereafter we get second quarter from FPP and MDDA later. I hope by the time we are supposed to deal with the matter of referred to us by the Speaker's office of former Minister Mutambi. I hope at that time we'll still be here as members, because I need members more than any other person on that one, because we must take a decision on that matter. You are welcome, all of you. Our time is up to 1 o'clock, but there is a memorial service at 11:30 to 12:30. Unfortunately, we'll have to miss that memorial service of our former colleague, Comrade Feza Kaloliwe, whom her funeral was the Friday before last. So there is that memorial service. I'm not sure why it was scheduled for 11:30. Generally, we hold our memorial services at 12, or 12:30 to 1:30. But anyway, that's the decision. We'll see what to do. Again, members, you are welcome. DM, we know that the minister lost the sister, and I'm informed this morning that the funeral was on Saturday. Unfortunately, we didn't know that the funeral would be on Saturday. I hope there are members who did go there, because sometimes we need to support each other during that moment, because that moment is a difficult one. Apologies. The first one will be from the minister. The minister is not fine. We understand. I mean, it's immediately after the funeral. She can't be available for such activities. That's the first one. Mr. Mbinda is in another committee on defense. Ms. Drachen, Nivot Drachen, is attending another meeting. I don't have any other apology. Members, we proceed. The legal services will take us through You'll recall, members, that we wrote to Mr. Mhlaluga to tell us as to why we cannot remove him as a councillor and the chairperson of the ICASA Council. We did get a long response and, from his lawyers. But what we needed from the as an assistance from the legal services is to how we proceed with the matter. And we're going to get that from the lady next to me here. No, you cannot be a lady, Mr. Ngoma. The lady next to me is that is the lady next to you, so I can't refer you to as the lady. Over to you, ma'am. Just introduce yourself to the meeting first, and then you can take us.
Thank you, Chief. Mr. Ngoma is not that lucky to be a lady. Good morning, Chair and honourable members and guests. My name is Fatima Ibrahim and I'm one of the parliamentary legal advisors. As members are aware, on 15th of January, Mr. Mhlaluga was convicted on a charge of fraud, and the conviction stemmed from allegations that Mr. Mhlaluga and five others defrauded the Land and Agricultural Bank of South Africa in an amount of 6 million rand that was meant for the benefit of emerging black farmers. It's our understanding from press reports that he's due to be sentenced on the 3rd of April, and he has indicated via his attorneys that his intention is to proceed to appeal that conviction. On 27th of February, the committee resolved to commence with the removal process in terms of Section 8 of the ICASA Act. And Section 8(1)(f) in particular provides for the removal of a councillor who has become disqualified in terms of Section 6(1)(j) of the Act, which lists the offence of fraud as a disqualification criteria. We invited Mr. Mhlaluga to make written representations, which he duly did, and I'm just going to briefly take you through those. As part of those reps, he included a transcript of the oral delivery of the judgment in court. By its nature, these transcripts are a little bit difficult to follow because you're relying on somebody transcribing an audio recording that isn't always clear, so it's not a written judgment, but I believe it has been shared with members nonetheless. The regional magistrate delivered the judgment on 15th of January 2018, and there were six accused involved in the matter. The first was Mr. Mhlaluga, and I will refer to them as the accused one to six in my presentation just for ease, and that's the way it's done in the transcript. Accused number two, which is the one under consideration now, is Mr. Mhlaluga. Accused number three was the lawyer that acted on accused one and accused two's behalf, it's Mr. Kwesha. And then accused four is a commercial entity, Dingwako Farming, but charges were withdrawn there. Accused five is the firm of attorney. So accused five and accused three, in fact, is one and the same because the firm of attorneys is represented by accused three.
And then members, you don't have the document. What you have is the judgment that was stipulated and the letter that we wrote to Mhlaluga and the response that goes with the judgment. So this is just a briefing. I think if because this is the process that we need to follow, we'll just take notes, because that's what they prepared for us.
Yes, Chair, you're correct. This is just an internal document that I've prepared to assist me in doing the presentation. There were two state witnesses in the matter. One was a gentleman by the name of Mr. Chia, and it's not clear from the judgment what his background is. The second was a Mr. Masoma, who was an employee of the land bank and who apparently acted on the instructions of accused number one, Mr. Moshlalani. So according to the judgment, the following events transpired. In 2018, Waka Farming Projects applied to the land bank for funding in the amount of 6 million rand, and the application was approved and the money was paid into the trust account of accused five, being the firm of attorneys being represented, acting at least on behalf of Dingwako. Accused one testified that in 2007 he was CEO of the Limpopo Youth Commission, at the same time when Mr. Moshlaloha was the chairperson here in Parliament of the Portfolio Committee on Agriculture. They knew each other from the ANC as well as because they happened to be neighbours. Later on, accused one then became the CEO of the land bank, which is when the transaction occurred. Mr. Chia, who is now state witness, testified that Mr. Moshlaloha arranged a meeting in December 2007 between himself, Mr. Chia, accused one, and accused three to discuss this issue of obtaining funding from the land bank. And following this meeting, Mr. Chia and Mr. Moshlaloha proceeded to identify a suitable farm to buy with the money that they believe they would receive from the land bank, and then to make the necessary application for funding in terms of the Agri-BEE scheme. In January 2008, which was the following year, another meeting took place at Mr. Moshlaloha's home, where accused one, who by now was CEO of the land bank, indicated that he could arrange funding of 4 million rand for the purchase of a farm and 2 million rand for the balance of the project. It's not clear from the judgment what the additional 2 million was for, but I assume it would have been for things like purchasing implements and related costs in setting up the farming project. In the meeting, it was decided that accused three would be the legal advisor for the transaction. Accused one stated that Mr. Moshlaloha could not apply for the funding himself, as he was a member of parliament at the time and also chairperson of the Portfolio Committee on Agriculture, which obviously would have had some oversight duty over the land bank. Thus, it was decided that Mr. Chia, who was now state witness, would make the application. An accused one explained the process for making the application, and the parties then agreed to call this Project Dingwako. Another state witness, Mr. Masoma, who worked for the land bank, testified that he received instructions from accused one to prepare the requisition for payment of the funds of the 6 million rand. The money was indeed received in February 2008 and paid into the trust account of the law firm. So there's no dispute that the 6 million was indeed received. Within the next few months, various payments were then made to Mr. Chia's personal account, which according to his testimony was meant to be a loan. No debt acknowledgement, however, was signed. So Mr. Chia, if you recall, is the state witness who's saying that he also loaned money from that 6 million that was paid. In 2008, Dingwako purchased a farm for 2.3 million rather than the 4 million as per the So in 2018, Waka purchased a farm for 2.3 million rather than the 4 million which was contained in the application. So they purchased a different farm to the one that was identified in the funding application, and it appears from the judgment that the reason may have been was because an audit process had now started to ensure that all documentation was in order. But at that point, no farm had yet been purchased, and the accusation is that there was then a hurried effort to quickly identify and purchase the farm. Accused one denied all knowledge of any of the meetings, and he denied facilitating the loan or even having known Mr. Masoma, who was the employee at the land bank. He admits to meeting Mr. Chiata Bri, but insists that he only gave him telephone numbers of people who could assist him in obtaining funding in terms of this project. Mr. Moshlaloha confirmed in his testimony that he was indeed chairperson of the Portfolio Committee on Agriculture. He states that he was not aware that he was not entitled to a grant in terms of the manual governing these grants, and he admits to assisting accused one with a payment of legal fees. It's not clear whether that payment of legal fees was in connection with this matter or another. Mr. Moshlaloha also confirms that he did indeed receive some money from the $6 million, but testified that these payments actually constituted a loan. He confirms that he did not sign any loan agreement, and at the time that the matter went to trial, that he had not paid any of the money back. He confirms further that he used the money to purchase two BMW vehicles, and that he did indeed have access to this money in order to do those purchases himself. His version of Mr. Moshlaloha. So he does confirm indeed that he received money out of the $6 million and that he used that money to purchase the vehicles. In terms of his representations, he submits that the magistrate had very little regard to the legal issues that were raised during the trial, and based the judgment on whether he believed the version of the two state witnesses rather than on whether he believed that Mr. Moshlaloha's version could be reasonably possibly true. In a criminal trial, the onus is beyond reasonable doubt, and this is what is now being contested on appeal. So you don't look at a balance of probabilities. The court needs to satisfy itself that without a doubt the accused is indeed guilty of the offense. So in other words, the court would have had to be satisfied that it was definitely not a loan and it was a fraudulent transaction. And Mr. Moshlaloha submits that the magistrate did not apply his mind properly to that issue. He further argues that he didn't have the necessary mens rea, which is a Latin word for the intention to commit a crime. A crime is only a crime where it's committed with intent. So according to his version, because it was meant to be a loan, he never had any intention of defrauding the land bank, and therefore without intent he cannot be guilty of the offense. He's of the view that he enjoys a reasonable prospect of success on appeal, and notes that he served ICASA with distinction between 2016 and 2017, and for that reason was also then later on appointed as a chairperson. He requests that he be placed on a precautionary suspension on full pay, which would strike a balance between his rights and the duties of ICASA and the committee. And he also further alleges that this opportunity that was given to him to provide representations is merely an act of lip service, and the outcome has already been predetermined by the committee. So he asks that the transcript of the committee meeting where the matter was last discussed be provided, and that he also be provided with a further opportunity to supplement the representations. And I'll give you my view on that a little bit later, Chair. On the way forward, as I indicated in my first legal presentation, the committee has a discretion, and in applying that discretion, the threshold is extremely high. If you read the ICASA Act, you'll note that people that have been found guilty of fraud would have been non-starters at the beginning. They would have never been appointed, so the committee would not have even been able to consider the matter. However, later on in the section dealing with the disqualification, the Act does indeed use the word may, and this discretion is supported by the fact that a report must go to the National Assembly where a vote must take place. So if it were a must, it wouldn't make sense, because then there would be no purpose in having the National Assembly make a decision, because you might have a legal misnomer if the House feels otherwise, notwithstanding that there is a conviction. So certainly there is discretion, but in my view, the threshold would be extremely high, because we must take into regard the fact that these crimes would have prevented somebody from being appointed in the first place. Representations are invited to consider why, despite a conviction, a councillor should not be removed. I do not believe it's the purpose of this committee or within the ambit of this committee to debate the merits of the conviction. This committee is not a court of law. We have accepted that a guilty verdict triggers the removal process, and we certainly don't have the expertise here to determine guilt or innocence. The question is, notwithstanding that there is a guilty verdict, whether the committee is of the view that the person may remain or the person must be removed. In this regard, the consideration would center on the nature of the fraud. As I explained in the last meeting, there are many types of fraud. It may be financial, it may be non-financial, and the example that I use is a parent who wants to get their child into a particular school who then fraudulently inserts a wrong or incorrect address on that form, perhaps using a relative's address in order to get the child into a local school. That type of fraud would not have a monetary value that's attached to it. So there are different degrees of fraud. So what the committee would have to consider is the seriousness of the this particular fraudulent action, the amount of money involved, the person or entity who suffered the loss, and then collectively whether these issues are sufficient to create a lack of trust in the individual and a reasonable apprehension that the individual cannot be placed in a position of trust and authority, which being a counsellor would be relevant. The representations speak of a possible success on appeal and the view that the magistrate erred. As I indicated, I don't believe that the committee can test this. It's beyond the capacity of the committee to test this, and legislation could not have envisaged that this would be the role of Parliament. The representations further note that the chair has served with distinction, and this is a factual inquiry that is in the purview of the committee, and the question is whether the service to date outweighs the risk of allowing Mr. Moshla Loha to remain in the position. In the matter at hand, what is important to note is the facts that are not in dispute. Firstly, he has not denied receiving the money. He has not denied that he has used the monies to pay for two personal vehicles, or that he was aware that the money was intended for a particular project and not to be spent freely. All that he alleges is that the transaction was a loan and therefore it does not constitute fraud. I do note from the judgment that there appears to be no factual evidence supporting that there was a loan agreement in place. There's certainly nothing in writing that it supports a loan, but this version is supported by accused one who also benefited from some of the funds, who also says that that it was a loan payment to him. In considering the matter, regard must therefore be had to the following. The offence was committed at a time when the chairperson was in a position of public office as the chairperson of the Portfolio Committee on Agriculture. So there is a conflict that is not within the purview of the judgment of the court, but certainly would have been a conflict of interest within the parliamentary sphere at the time. It's not within my knowledge whether these interactions were declared in any way to the committee. There's no information about that in the judgment. Then the offence indeed did involve public funds, which as I understand were intended to benefit poor black farmers in particular. The complainant is the Land Bank, which is also a state institution. And the nature of the fraud, in my view, is extremely serious and throws into question the integrity of Mr. Moshla Loha and his ability to manage ICASA, notwithstanding whether it was a loan or indeed a fraudulent transaction. The request to be placed on suspension, which certainly can be done via request to the minister while we await the appeal process and the outcome of that, does carry with it financial implications, and it also may affect the stability of the board. But the committee will be in a better place to consider that than what I am. The committee must now properly apply its mind in reaching a decision. discussions in the committee where certain members may have previously implied that the process is merely a formality is not to be regarded as a decision of the committee. Those are individual views of members of parliament. Members of parliament express their views in many ways and in many different forms regarding a wide range of things. However, views remain just that, views, until they are formally accepted as a decision by the committee. On my understanding of the last committee meeting, there was no decision to indicate that this was merely a formality in order for us to tick the boxes. We invited the representations, and I assume that members have seriously considered those representations, and the committee will apply its mind to all of the factors that I've raised. As to whether we should allow further representations based on what happened in that last committee meeting, this is in terms of the request for the transcript of the meeting. The meeting was indeed open. My understanding was that, in fact, it was televised on that particular day. Nothing would have prevented any person from requesting the audio visuals through the normal parliamentary channels already, if they so wish. But that being said, Chair, I do not see that anything that could have happened in that meeting or that materialized in that meeting could have any bearing on the representations. The representations are purely to indicate why, notwithstanding a conviction, a person should not be removed. So any discussion that was had at that point in time, I don't think it has a bearing on the actual representations. If Mr. Moshla Loha is unhappy about the process that has been followed by the committee, he's of course free to approach a appropriate court to test whether we've applied the process correctly, and that option will always be available to him. So it's not clear to me why the meeting would have or how it would have a bearing on any further representations. But what the committee now needs to do is to discuss all of these issues and then reach a decision, after which a report would need to be sent to the National Assembly, and it's the National Assembly who will then pass a resolution on whether to follow the committee recommendation or not. Thank you, Chair.
Yeah. Thank you very much, Edna. Surely members will have to, on the basis of the presentation, will have to raise questions for clarity and all of that, so that when we take a decision, we are clear as members. There is a question there, Van Damme.
Thanks, Chair. I'd like to thank the legal advisor for her representation, is that the correct word? I think I agree mostly with what she said. It's not up to us to apply our minds to the judgment. We're not here to discuss the merits of whether or not the court was right in coming to its decision. I think what we need to do is limit ourselves to the ICASA Act. The ICASA Act is very clear that there's a removal from office in 8.1F if a person becomes disqualified as contemplated in Section 6.1. So Mr. Matlaloga has become disqualified in terms of Section 6.1, and therefore he is no longer fit to hold office. It is also not up to us to make judgments about whether or not he's been a good ICASA chair. All that is not a requirement listed in the Act. It does not say that the Parliament must consider whether or not a person has served well in their term. We need to limit ourselves to the Act, and I think we must take the legal advice. If Mr. Mutlaloga is not happy with Parliament's decision, if that's the decision to remove him from office, he has the option to take that on judicial review, but I think we need to apply the Act as it stands before us. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you very much. Any other? Clear. do we go through the discussion now, take a decision on what we are supposed to do, or we discuss it at a later stage? Honorable Kalako.
I thought, Chair, we can conclude it while she's still here.
Yeah.
I think the matter is clear. So to me, I don't see any reason of postponing it. Let's just conclude.
Yes. I think even the last meeting we had was very clear that the conviction and the judgment was in February this year.
Yeah. The judgment, the sentence will be passed in April. But the conviction clear, he went to court and all of that. And already, if you open this book, then the issue of disqualification is contained here. I think that's our role. Our role is not fundamentally correct, as it was said by the legal advisor. We are not contesting the case. We are sticking on what we are supposed to do as Parliament. And informed by that, I think we need to take that decision. There is suspension that we are supposed to look at, because the minister is in charge of that. And then and we need to take that to Parliament. So it's up to the committee to decide as to what we do. Regardless that the matter was raised, because I want to raise this again, I think during the interviews, this fraud issue was raised. And indeed then there was no conviction. We proceeded because there was no conviction at the time. Remember, this is the case when he was still chair of agriculture, and then from there he went to the Department of Communications and all of that. So, the discussion during the interviews was informed by that, if members can remember. But now there is a conviction. Sentencing is next month. 3rd of April, see? Which is just now, next week. And then, Baba.
Chair, I think from the presentation, it becomes very clear that the reasons are not convincing for us not to go in the route that we have decided in the last meeting. It's correct that we must take a decision, Chair, which says let's proceed as we have decided. We have given him the opportunity to convince us so that we can go the route of removing him as per the legislation. Now we are in that space. I think let's conclude it in that manner. You are right, and I think she also indicated as well that we are not a court of law. We are not necessarily interested in a lot of technicalities that he might be raising. This matter arose even the first time we received his presentation, that the presentation is structured in a way like we are another court of law and we are not. Ours was to get legal opinion. Now the legal opinion is very clear. I think let's conclude it in that way.
Those are the views, Honorable Clark.
Well, thanks, Chair, for the opportunity. Chair, just one question, perhaps from to the legal person, what could be her view? Because it appears that as he alleges, perhaps this was a loan. Perhaps the conditions is like perhaps he wants to hide behind the loan. Was that loan perhaps authentic, or does it hold water for him to can survive or something? I just wanted to know if the nature of that loan.
Is that all members? And surely this is just for information for Mr. Clark, for Honorable Clark, because we're not necessarily getting into those issues. I'm sure you understand, Honorable Clark. But for information, I think it's proper that if you are able to respond to that, then we conclude the matter.
Chair, all the judgment says is that his contention was that it was a loan that he intended to repay, but that no loan agreement was signed. So there was no evidence tendered in court to indicate anything external that's showing that it was a loan, but indeed that was his contention and the contention of accused number one. What the court found was that it could not be believed because there was no evidence supporting that. Thank you, Chair.
Okay, Chair.
No, Chair. I think I on behalf of the department, we know what the committee is doing, and I think we were taken in confidence by yourself on when you started to trigger the process from the committee side, when you started to write the letters of why he should not be suspended. And I think all of us know that the minister also has a role to play, empowered by the Act. So once you trigger the process from your side, the minister will also act swiftly, empowered by the Act to act accordingly.
Thanks, dear. I think we are all at one on the issue, and maybe it will be necessary just to, because legal services will have to advise us. And again, the committee last time, when we discussed the matter, we said he must make the presentation. But according to the legislation, we are not supposed to keep the person who is disqualified by the Act. This is what we say. But be that as it may, we said he must make a presentation. A representation as to why we cannot suspend, we cannot disqualify him. So, the decision to disqualify him is now going to be taken today to kickstart the process of disqualifying him. It's starting today because I think members are at one in relation to that. We just need a formulation that will be read to the committee to accept. And then the legal person will do that quickly, and then we can endorse that. And then, two, there is this process of Parliament where we are supposed to request the minister to suspend. You're supposed to talk.
Thank you.
So when we take a decision for the move in, I didn't look at that, but I know. When you kickstart the process to remove the person, the suspension falls off. Yeah.
All right. Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. Not to say you are wrong, Chairperson, there is a particular section in the Act, which is Section 8.3, that deals with the department, the minister, in terms of the suspension process. In terms of National Assembly, it's section 8.2 that says a councillor may be removed from office only on a finding to that effect by the National Assembly and the adoption by the National Assembly of a resolution calling for that councillor's removal from office. Section 8.3, which deals with the minister, raises such the minister may suspend a councillor from office at any time after the start of the proceedings of National Assembly for the removal of that councillor. Must remove a councillor from office upon adoption by the National Assembly of the resolution calling for that councillor's removal. And C, must suspend a councillor from office at any time after the start of the proceedings of the National Assembly for the removal of that councillor upon the request by the National Assembly.
Because not all of us have read this document now, the legislation. Legal services, can you simplify the two processes for the committee so that when you give us the summary for us to take a decision, we are clear of those two, suspension and then the National Assembly process?
Chair, there are two methods of suspension. The first is that once the committee starts its proceedings, which the committee already did in the previous meeting when you received the first legal opinion and you resolved to start the proceedings, at that point the minister enjoys the discretion as to whether the minister wishes, in the minister's view, to suspend, and Parliament has nothing to do with that suspension. That's entirely in the minister's discretion. The second way of suspending is whilst the committee is deliberating the matter, the committee can, via the National Assembly, request the minister to suspend. In our case, I think it would be unnecessary because my understanding is that this report, once it goes to the National Assembly, if it's passed, the minister will then terminate that membership immediately. So there's no need then for a suspension unless the intention of the committee is to hold this matter over till the next meeting and in the interim to ask the National Assembly to request the minister to suspend. But in terms of our time frames, I think all our report needs to say is that the committee has decided that the chairperson needs to be removed and the minister will then follow that termination process.
That's it. I think it's clear now. Members, she's working on the short presentation that will inform a report that belongs to the committee and that for Parliament. Okay. She will go out, work on it. We suspend that discussion until she comes back, and then we proceed with another item. Because of time, I think we proceed with the FPP whilst she is working. That she will take about 10 minutes, and then after that she will come back and give us a report. FPP? Thank you very much, members. I think it was a very pointed, short discussion. Deputy Minister and your team, we are ready to listen to you. This is a quarter two that we need to deal with. From FPB. Thank you very much. Over to you.
Thank you, Honourable Chair and Honourable Members of the Committee. Of course, with me is the members of the Board of the FPB, the Deputy Chair, Mr. Ramanyana, and a member, Lisaku, and the CEO, Acting CEO, of course, Mr. Nene, and Wulebani Matiza, the CFO, as well as the acting COO. We are here, Chair, to present the second quarter report, and I can confirm that as a new ministry in the department, we had an opportunity to have a few sessions with the FPB, given some of the pertinent issues that we were dealing with. But we have the CFC, acting CEO, who will be able to present the second quarter report. I think one of the issues that we have been dealing with, the committee is aware that it will be heard tomorrow, or there will be judgment around it tomorrow, the Inwara issue. Of course, some of the lessons that we are learning, and it will help probably a great deal on how we deal with matters of classification going forward. The FPB is an entity that receives money from the department, but some of the money, it's revenue that they collect through the classification process. But the acting CEO will present to committee on how we are faring in that regard. Of course, the worrying factor is that we still have people in acting positions, something that we'll also very closely deal with so that we stabilize administration. So it's one of the things that will be very close to our program as we deal with the entity going forward. Thank you.
Thank you very much, RTM. I don't see the chairperson of SCB. I see the deputy. And I don't know how many other members of the board. Can we, TM, can we leave that to the deputy chair? Thank you.
Deputy Minister, chairperson and members of the committee.
Can you push that in?
I said Deputy Minister, acting DG, acting CEO, members of the committee, and everybody who's around here. Chairperson, thank you for really giving me this opportunity. I think the Deputy Minister has already introduced us, the people who are here. The only snake is that I'm a little bit worried too, because there are those members who said they were coming, and I'm trying to look around, but I don't see them. It means that I'm the only council member. Oh, there's Mr. Likage there at the corner standing.
Where's Mr.
Likage? Standing behind the gentleman.
Standing.
Can we try and get a space so that we fit the next one our company?
Но и сошел бы. А вот он ты. Па?
I thought you were seeing the aeroplane coming. Maybe you saw him.
Okay.
And
that's
because it was written there, and then we that of it. Okay. With Ms. Tabiseng, the acting CEO, Mr. Vudezani Matisse, acting CEO, and the acting CEO. The chairperson was unable to come. She had to be in hospital yesterday. Somebody was being operated from her family, and she was supposed to be there. I thought that maybe she'll be coming this morning, but he said it's impossible because she'll be going back to the hospital again. The other members have just given apologies. You know, there are those who are working full time and they should be there. Like the one who already was on the way coming here, and the legislature said she was supposed to come and present something at the Gauteng legislature today. I think the honor. Not honorable. Mr. Acting CEO Nene will do the presentation.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, we needed that explanation, so thank you very much for that. Mr. Nene?
Morning, Chairperson, and members of the committee, and at 2:00 DM. We are going to present our second quarter. And in terms of the outline of our presentation, we've got the overall organizational highlight and some of the challenges. We've also have the performance analysis of what was achieved, but we've also included the performance information versus the amount that was spent in achieving those targets. And we also have targets that were not achieved and some of the plans that were put in place to make sure that we address them. And then obviously there's ICT and finance. In terms of the targets, we are sitting at 85% of our quota targets that we achieved. But beyond that, what we did was we did a midterm review of the entire, of the first two terms, and we came up with 52% of the annual performance target that we achieved.
Sorry.
And then okay. And then the minister then approved, in terms of our highlights again, minister approved the draft regulations and draft regulation tariffs, which were gazetted. We also participated in terms of our work. We did largely with public education, so we participated in non-outreach and our awareness workshops, which we reached about above 6,400 learners, as well as 251 educators in six provinces. We also signed a multi-year agreement with our labor. Starting from the 1st of April, Chairperson, all our employees in the bargaining unit would be receiving their increment. And we also submitted, in line with the budget cycle of Treasury, we submitted our first draft of the 2018-2019 APP, and then we had to also resubmit the 2017 APP. We also participated in the ICT SADC Ministers meeting, which was held in Durban. And as you know, Chairperson, currently in the ICT SADC, we have the ICT protocol on communications, transport, and meteorology. What it simply says, it talks about the harmonization of the sector, whether it's poster, whether it's broadcasting. So one of the things that we are trying to do is to create, again, harmonization within the classification, content classification, and agenda within the SADC community. So that's why we participated in this meeting. In terms of our challenges, you will know, Chairperson, as it was indicated by Deputy Minister, we have vacancies both at an executive level as well as some of the critical posts. And we also include the staff morale, which happened as a result of the deductions. We had discovered an error where, for instance, members of the staff were appointed and they were not making contribution due to that error. They were not making contribution in their medical aid as well as their pension fund. So this was it started in 2016 until 2017. So that brought about a bit of a difficulty in terms of the morale. But we can report to say that in this final quarter, the quarter four, that has been resolved. We also had delays in terms of, which is something outside of our own control in terms of the amendment of our bill, and which is causing regulatory uncertainty. We must just say that we have, for instance, we have a working relationship with, for instance, your mobile operators. We have signed, we have Facebook, we've got Google. But we are struggling with the likes of Netflix, we are struggling with the likes of Amazon. And the quicker we get the bill out, the better for us, because some of the issues that we intend to achieve through the amended legislation are some of the things that they are pointing us to. And as I've highlighted, Chair, here I'm not going to deal with in all the recruitment, except to say that in terms of the CEO, the interviews were conducted on the 30th, and then council had recommended or submitted a recommended candidate to the Office of the Minister. This is in line with our legislation. It says the appointment of the CEO is done in consultation with the Minister. So that was, in terms of the three, the Chief Financial Officer, the CEO, and then the Shared Service Executive, I can report that this week they are going for psychometric. So we're towards the last part in terms of our recruitment. And obviously the Chief Information Officer, we would be starting our shortlist very soon. In terms of the performance analysis, we are, in terms of our pie chart, we're at 85%, and then we have 15% red. And in terms of where are those, you'll note that SO2, SO4, and SO5, we achieved all our planned targets, except, of course, SO1 as well as SO3. What we've done is that we've looked at the performance information versus the expenditure that we had to obviously spend in reaching those things. Those are the graphical representation. For instance, we spent about 43% in SO1 to achieve about 59%. So those are some of the things. I want to, with your permission, Chairperson, I won't go through all of them, but these are some of the graphical representation of what was spent and what was achieved per SOE, per strategic objective. And now we move to some of the targets that were not achieved. The first one, we had annually planned that we were going to have the classification governance framework, which obviously assists us in terms of achieving a moderate level of adherence. And in terms of our quarterly targets, we had sought to find or to get approval from council, but this never happened. And what we are saying there, Chair, is that it was our own deficiencies. It was due to lack of planning, because there are different stages that has to take place. There are different activities that has to follow that before council actually approve. And then the second was to have four phases of the development and learning strategy, and for physical as well as the physical and games implemented. This emanates from two things, Chair. When you get people who are pirating movies, some of them are actually abusing our classification rating, because there's a certificate that we issue. So in the absence of that, we needed to build up something that also protects us from such abuse. So we have developed, we've developed a trademark policy, but in the trademark policy, we needed it to be revised. Of course, then, in terms of what we've done is that this has been submitted and approved in quarter three. And then the fourth one is that we had planned to review the classification guideline. In terms of the council, the decision had been taken that previously we would classify or would review our classification guidelines after every 2 years. And a decision was taken to say, let's review them after every 5 years. Because that's the only time that you really get to understand whether there has been any change in societal norms and values that guides the work that we do. And the launch, we had planned that we were going to launch it in August 23, Of course, then due to capacity challenges, we could not do that. We had sought to draft the baseline document, which is what we are using to consult, and subsequently we launched our classification guidelines on the 19th of February this in this court. And then under SO3, effective and efficient management of our operations, we were at the hands of the committee here, because we would have loved to have some of the progress report in terms of what would have happened in terms of our bill. And this, obviously, we didn't meet the target, because, again, it's beyond our control. But the other target is around the 95% of classification decision that we issue, the registration of renewal licenses issued within 8 working days. Here we've achieved, in terms of the registration, when you register, we've achieved all our registration and renewals within eight days. However, in terms of our classification decision, we only achieved 91%, so there was just a 4% shortage in terms of our delays. And some of the delays, of course, are caused by some of the decision, because you classify and then there's a classification committee that sits, and the committee obviously will draft the report. And sometimes it does take longer, because there could be issues where our decisions are challenged. There's also an ongoing engagement with our classification unit, which is what guides the work that we do. And then we are discussing with them in terms of the turnaround time. The 9 coaching session, I mean, in terms of leadership, one of the first things that was planned is to make sure that we have leaders that are able to develop others, whether through coaching or mentoring. And unfortunately, this target was never achieved, but we've since appointed the service provider who's going to be doing the assessment of coaching needs in our organization. And lastly, our target to implement 100% of our compliance with governance framework, we did not achieve this. We had to revise the framework, which was done, but the tabling, because once it has been revised, it must be tabled to council for approval. Unfortunately, we did not have, but subsequently this has been done in quarter 3. On ICT, we now have, which is again addressing issues raised by the national development, the ease of business. One of the things that we are trying to do is to make sure that we have an online content regulation system where you don't necessarily need to submit physical copies to ask for classification. So we had implemented the system, and it went live at the end of September, and we have socialized, we have engaged all our stakeholders, especially your stake in Eagles, all your bigger distributors were invited. The second phase that we're working on is to focus on the classification on games. But equally important, what we're now beginning to see is that as much as these people are now submitting their content online, we need to then align in terms of our financing, so that they submit online, but we're able equally to build them online. So those are some of the things that we're trying to do. We were trying to develop a mobile application. Unfortunately, we had to host a hackathon event for the mobile app to be developed. Obviously, in simple terms, we are trying to get young people to develop this, have it in a competition format, and whoever becomes, and we are working with Innovation Hub, we are working with Telkom, BCX, so that whoever develops this thing is able to be taken by those institutions. So we have about 100 young people who are going to be competing for this. Around ICT operations, there was a finding by the AG that we did not have a disaster recovering plan. And then what we had done, we had already appointed someone in 2017 to provide the service on our behalf. Unfortunately, it took about 6 months for a person to come back to say that they need cash. However, we're a government institution, we don't provide cash upfront. subsequently we then appointed the second best candidate, which is TCC. So that has been resolved as we speak. In terms of our vulnerability assessment of our critical system, we have done the assessment, and obviously in terms of where we are, we've identified about over 3,000 threats that were intended to attack our finance system, and these were successfully stopped. In terms of the finance, I would now allow the acting CFO to look at our finance. Thank you.
Good morning, Chairperson, the Deputy Minister, the DG, the Council Deputy Chair, and the Council Member, as well as the Honourable Members. In terms of our finances, where we are currently, we spent 42.4 million overall as at the end of quarter two of 17-18 financial year, which account to about 43% of the total expenditure. But if you factor in the commitment into that, it goes up to about 48%. And then if you were to compare on each with the 16-17 financial year, you look at SO1, we achieved about 38% in 16-17 financial year, and then in the current financial year we reported 43%. So there was an increase of about 5%. And then if you look at the SO2, which is your branding and marketing, particularly the outreach, we spent 2 million, which is about 42%. If you compare that with the achievement for 16-17 financial year, it was 40%. So there's an increase of about 2% there. And if you factor in the commitment, it's 51%. And then on SO3, in the previous financial year, 16-17, we achieved 44%. And then this year, we achieved 43%. So there's a slight decrease of about 1%. And then on SO4, which is the OCR that the CEO was talking about, we spent 46% compared to 34% that we spent in 16-17 financial year. So there was an increase of about 12%, particularly because of that expenditure on the OCR development. And on SO5, we spent 54% in 16-17 financial year, and then it declined to 37% in this current financial year. And this is particularly around the partnership with the universities. We couldn't get to partner with the university, so we had to adjust, you know, the money downwards and allocate this into the guideline review media engagement, because we knew that we were not going to spend all the money that has been allocated in this strategic objective. So the overall percentage, we spent 48% as at the end of quarter two, which is in line with the projected expenditure of about 50%. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chairperson. That's our presentation.
Okay. Are you sure you are done? Okay, members, that's the presentation. Do you want to say anything? Not now.
No, I will wait for comments.
Yes.
By members of the
panel. Okay. Members, that's the presentation from FPB. Pumzile van Dam. Pumzile van Dam.
Thanks, Chief. My first question to the Deputy Chair of the Board, she indicated that there were members who said they were coming. Who are those members who said they were coming? Were flight tickets purchased for them? Why are they not here? We've raised the issue before of only a select number of the FPB Board members appearing before this committee, and others we never see. We just bezamendaba. So who said they were coming? We'd like those names. And did the SPB spend money for flight tickets for those people? And then the question about the filling of vacancies, Deputy Minister, I think this is also an issue that you and the Minister incoming will have to take up. There are many, many, many actors across all entities, and I think this is an issue that as an incoming Minister and Deputy Minister, you really need to light the fire under the feet of these entities. It cannot be that we continue to have actors time and time again. Every time we come to Parliament, we're told, oh no, now there's a new acting Banban there, there's another actor here. Here we see that the interviews for the CEO were completed on 13 November. That's December, January, February, March, almost April, 5 months ago. What's the delay? And then I'm also worried about what appear to be a lot of, what appears to be just general disorganization at the SPB. There's targets are not reached due to lack of planning, capacity channel challenges, delays in final approval, the revised framework was not tabled at council. It seems to be just a whole lot of disorganization. And as a result, targets are not met. And I think that's an issue the minister will also have to take up. And then the issue du jour, there's a court case tomorrow about Inyeba. I understand that the, you will have to give me the correct name now, the tribunal, the appeals tribunal has its own position, and the SPB council, or SPB board, has its own position. Can you just give us broad feedback about what's your action plan in court tomorrow? What is it that the SPB is going to be arguing, and what is it that the tribunal is going to be arguing? Because I've noticed that the SPB has distanced themselves from the tribunal. So what's going to be happening in court tomorrow? Thank you very much.
Thank you, ma'am. Broadly, that question of people coming here, any tickets paid, but it links up with the irregular, fruitless, and wasteful expenditure. DM, CEO, just reflect, because there is a lot of wastage. As we vote money, then it's wasted and all of that. But also, entities continue to employ services of consultants. You know, a number of years without ensuring that there are people where skills are imparted so that we do away with consultants. Maybe for specific things and all of that, that will be the completeness of that question. As I add, Honorable Van Damme, I think it links up with all of that. Veronica Van Dijk?
You actually raised the issue on the consultant. I also want to just ask, got two questions. Irregular, fruitless, and wasteful expenditure. There's no mention of that. Can you just elaborate for the period under review? And then also, besides PICMA Comforting Company, is there any other companies that were used for consulting purposes? And can you just elaborate on that? And also the cost involved with the consultants?
Baba?
Thanks, Chair. I think the presentation is simply that it doesn't have, it's not numbered page one. So maybe that could assist us. So I'll just go straight. It's around SO1, maybe, on the trademark policy to be reviewed. It's like it exists, but they're saying it's going to be reviewed again. So the process of review, well, it's like reviewing two times, reviewed. So I don't know maybe what the delay for it to be concluded. To Chair, coaching sessions were not done. Is this perhaps not a hindrance to an institution that it may have just been not done? I don't know if there was a contingency plan for it to be attended to. Why it was not done? Lastly, the sourcing of 100 young people, as is not listed, you only mentioned it by a figure, but it's not written. Where were they sourced, perhaps, from their representativity per province? I'm asking this on the basis of the fact that ahead of us, we also want to report successes to the community to be holding government again. So it's fair for us to see a reflection of either African or something of these young people whom are going to be assisted, so that we are then making impact to young people whom are the majority of people voting in this country. Thanks.
Okay.
Thank you, Chair. I think, Chair, mine is to congratulate the report. Though there's, I welcome the report, actually. Though there's two issues I have, but it's not a burning issue. I just want to know about this line outreach and awareness workshop reaching 6,452 learners to six provinces. Why you don't do the breakdown? Because you have to know these provinces. You know at the end, this problem we got from GCIS, I think when they do their presentation. This issue of not having this breakdown. We need this breakdown. Because we want to make sure those provinces that are getting services from our department. Secondly, Chair, I will just need those provinces. Which provinces? Because you only say six provinces. My second question, Chair, it's about the achievement. I think they achieved 84% of their target, if I'm right. And 15% were not achieved. Why? What is the reason of not achieving the 15%? Is there any serious reason of? Thanks, Chief.
Study.
Thank you.
Chair, a few issues from the report that has been presented that I will need to be clarified. There is a plan of action on the deliberations of the amendment bill, which according to our knowledge has already gone through parliamentary process. But your report says there are deliberations which are still going to take place on the 20th of October 2017. Can you convince us if this is not a cut and paste sort of an arrangement? Because as I've indicated, as far as I know, the bill has gone to Parliament, but it's still going to have some discussions on the 20th of October 2017. The I'm seeing a contradiction here, unless convinced otherwise, on your implementation and compliance with the annual corporate governance framework. As my colleague has indicated earlier, your pages are not numbered. But you have indicated earlier that there was lack of planning. But when you come down here, that there is 100% implementation of compliance with the governance framework. Is that not a contradiction? How come that you have 100% implementation quarter two, when somewhere up there there was lack of training. That you acknowledge yourself. Can you try and clarify that particular aspect? I'm sure you have seen that. The resubmission of the 17-18 annual performance plan. Why resubmission? What was wrong with that? With the 17-18 annual performance plan? Because from the report, you have submitted the current one and the 17-18 annual performance plan. Honorable Machova spoke about the outreach and awareness workshops, which we appreciate, but we she's right to say we definitely need to know exactly where did you have these workshops per province in terms of distribution, because it's important for us as we do our own constituency work. We need to check if indeed this meeting did take place. The last one, Chair, is to check if you in our last engagement there were no issues that we raised as the portfolio committee. The reason why we continue to raise this particular aspect is that we don't raise them for compliance purposes, just to tick the box. We raise them because we want these things to be attended to. So I'm not sure if in the last engagements there were no issues that were raised by the portfolio committee. And we're expecting progress report after the arrangement. The acting DG knows that kind of an arrangement that we've made. That every time an entity comes here to appear before the portfolio committee, you must start with our license, with the issues that we have raised in the last portfolio committee meeting, and what is it that has been done about those issues. And if there are those that are not attended to, why? So this is one issue that you'll have to clarify.
Thank you, Honorable Madisha. And the last point that you are raising is going forward. We can't raise issues all the time in the meeting, and then when you appear, you don't start there. That's what Comrade is saying. Because once we do that, they fall within the cracks and we are like just moving, ticking the box. You're right. Honorable Madisha, sorry, Mungamel.
Thank you very much. Permit me to first indicate that, in my own opinion, that which they presented is a positive. It does assure that there's a proper way forward. What I want to be clarified on is first the issue of staff morale. There is an indication that it's a sequel to the salary deductions, etc. You say that there is something that we've been able to attain, but at the same time you indicate, in my opinion, that still persists. Kindly explain what it is that you have been able to do. Now, secondly, having gone through the report, even before one could come here, one has been able to, identify a number of issues for the committee to consider. That is what you propose. Those are issues which in the earlier include the, as you put it, that, to quote, the entity previously recorded that trends highlighted, and so on and so on. Well, basically, you there are saying that the committee must deal with those, okay? It's a number of areas. The number of them. Are you then saying that you are unable to deal with those and therefore the committee must look into those particular areas? these are the issues that you have put. I want to repeat, because I realize that it looks like you have a problem. There you have written in your first document that issues for the committee to consider are the following. All right? Are you referring to this committee? Are you then having some problems so that we then can be able to say, yes, indeed, we've got to look into those and take this particular structure forward? But like I'm saying, pre-that, one thing that indeed you have been able to do as something that can take us forward. But can we deal with this? Give us a proper indication.
Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. I think you understand the last issue because that's our analysis. Commissioner Rumo, are you covered? The issue of 2%, was it raised? Disabled people. Because sometimes we need to stick to that so that we know as we proceed. Because that 2% is not only put as 2%, it must be achieved, members. But also the issue that was raised, remember this is quarter two acting CEO, and therefore some of the issues you should have updated, because some of the issues in relation to the bill and all of that, your report reflects before, that's what said it was raising, reflects before the bill was processed in, yeah, was tabled in Parliament. So your report should have been updated so that you deal with things properly. Anyway, those are the questions, FPB.
Chairperson, thank you very much. You know, concerning this quarter two presentation, I was worried yesterday. I was talking to the FPCO to say, why quarter two? Why don't they say quarter three? Because already you're in quarter four. I was a little bit worried about it. And it's true, because there are those things that happened in quarter three and that were not included. They are now not included in quarter two. And I understand why you are saying that. Honorable Fanda, I know last time when we were here, you were saying that the chairperson only invited the person or persons who supports her. And I said, and I was angry with that, because really I felt that I don't support the things that I'm working with her, and we must really work collectively. Now, Yolisa Makasi, you know, she's in government, and it's your guide that said you would like to have those people who are in public services to be mostly in the boards, and only those retired ones can be, maybe three or four of them. And that one is giving, yeah, there is something that has been written now. There is a legislation that says that. I'll phone you if I get it. I'll tell you which section is that. I know it's there. I've seen it in the Department of Social Development. They were reading about it. So, it's Yolisa, she's in government, and the others have got permanent jobs where they are working. And Yolisa is the one that I said yesterday, she was told that she must come to the legislature and present a report. And then Skeppers have given her own apologies. I will read them. Then he said, it's like, okay, Mr. Navonde was supposed to come. There's something happening in the university. That's why he has to come.
Maybe the issue, Deputy Chair, is that of expenses. I think that was the issue.
Yeah, that's what she's worried about. She wants to know if they were booked
and they were cancelled.
The person that I know was booked and it was cancelled is Yolisa. Because they informed me when I was at the airport that she won't be coming, she's going there. And then I read the message and it shows that she was going there. That one I'm definitely sure that she was booked and it was cancelled. But with the other ones, I'm not sure if they were, I don't think they were booked.
Well, there is the administration, acting CEO will have to deal with that. Because, I mean, you won't know that the person is booked and the ticket is paid. The CEO will definitely follow
Thanks, Chair.
For the finance person.
Thanks, Chair. With regard to the expenditure on the flight, we actually booked for 3 council members. 2 made it, 1 could not make it. But there was a cancellation that was sent to the travel agency, so they are not going to bill us. So in terms of the expenditure around the flights, you know, with regard to your fruitless and wasteful expenditure, what we normally do, we have a theft and loss committee. So if somebody misses the flight, we take the case to the theft and loss committee, and then they recommend what we need to do. But to this end, we have about 90% of recovery in terms of the people who missed flight.
Yeah. I think that's what we wanted to hear. CEO?
Thank you, Chair. Chair, I'll start with the easy questions, and then my colleagues will then... come in. I think the first question around staff morale. Chair, I think in 2016, when FPD was employing new staff members, there was an error in such a way where when we paid salaries, we were unable to deduct their contributions to medical aid funds as well as the SE.
Just hold on, Chair,
just to polish the language. Any member of parliament when asked a question may not be weighed to be easy or low or strong. So I think let him treat it as a relevant question. Thank you.
Yeah. So just to say these are the questions that you will deal with, not necessarily easy and difficult.
Okay. Thank you, Chairperson. I note that. So we had about 12 employees who collectively were at a disadvantage. The figure is currently being worked on, and what we then did was, because it was a 2016 thing, it took a bit longer to resolve. We sought legal advice. In the process of seeking legal advice, we do know that on the 7th of December there was a constitutional court judgment around the repayment of staff who would have received any amount or would have unduly benefited. So as we sit now, we have agreed in writing, we have agreement with all staff members that they are going to repay the amount owed to the APB for both pension and as well as the pension as well as the medical aid fund. But equally speaking, we're also talking about some of the consequence management, because they would have benefited out of an error which was committed by somebody. Those are some of the things. For 2016 till about this year, this issue, we are referring it to a staff morale, because people were not sure. Monies were deducted to them, and they were not sure when they would be required to pay back, if indeed they would be required to pay back. So that caused a bit of instability in terms of our staff morale. So when we refer to those, we are referring to a length or a prolonged period in our ability to resolve this thing, but it has been resolved now. And Chair, we were guided by two things in preparing for the quarter two. Was the actual quarter itself, but then we do know that we appeared before the committee during our annual report, as well as the fact that the committee had been in our offices during its oversight visit, which we actually submitted our input in terms of where we are in terms of implementing those things that were recommended by the committee to ourselves. So we've then felt that it could be repetitive because we've already addressed some of those things as well. The issue on disability, Chair, I think we are exceeding the target. We are sitting at 2.4%, so we are exceeding the target in terms of the disabilities. Some of the issues, for instance, were caused by when we said lack of learning incapacity. The reality of it at FEB was that when the entire executive left in the manner that they left, there was probably no succession plan to take things to take those who would have been at the second level. So some of the projects that were driven by colleagues that had left were unfortunately, they fell through the cracks, Jefferson, because there was that. So some of the things, if you look at the target or the achievement, we're at 85%. So it's only those things that either were not driven or that sought council approval. For instance, if you look at some of the review, these reviews were done, but they need to be approved by council. So if that did not happen, we can't then say it happened because we've got a document. Yes, we've got a document, but it has not been subjected through a proper process and a channel. And the coaching chair, the going back to the issue of consultant, I'll just make one comment on it. At FEB, at the time when we lost some of our critical employees, including the legal department. So we relied heavily on a consultant that had seconded somebody to work with us. So there was a person who was a resource that we sought who was providing legal assistance to us. And on my part, I'll ask my colleagues to take questions around where did we conduct some of these workshops in terms of the provinces and the district and some of the other questions. Thanks.
Thank you, Chairperson, the Deputy Minister, members of the committee. The consultations for our guidelines review in quarter three and quarter four was done in all the 9 provinces. We will be consolidating the public inputs that we have received on these consultations, and they will form part of our quarter four report. We have considered the importance of ensuring that as we review our guidelines, we consult extensively. And in the next month of the first quarter in the next financial year, because this project is going to be extended to the next financial year, we will be targeting young people and the youth in schools. Because in the first leg, we were targeting parents and industry. So our focus is in all the 9 provinces in the country. Thank you.
Thank you. With regard to the consultant, maybe just to give an indication of where we are as at the end of quarter 2, our consulting fees was sitting at 391,000 as at the end of quarter 2. And then if you compare this with what we have reported in 16-17 financial year, we reported about 2.1 million. And then as what we are projecting for the year end, we are projecting about 1.2, 1.4 million. So you can see that there is a significant reduction in terms of the consulting fees. And the biggest line item that we are using consultant on, as the ACEO has already highlighted, is on the legal fees. So there is a consideration to ensure that we reduce this. So if you compare it with the previous financial year, you can see the reduction on it. And then on the issue of coaching.
Tell us why reduction.
Okay, in terms of the
reduction. Yes, it was up and what have you done right?
Okay.
For it to be reduced.
I think last year I actually ensured the committee that with the skills transfer, particularly on the pastoral and finance, we ensured that the skills get transferred so that we can do the work in-house. So the likes of, you know, your management accounts and the reports and some of the things that we used to outsource in the finance department are done in-house. So those are some of the things that we managed to reduce consultant on. And also with some of the operations consultant, we told them that we need to do things in-house and not highly dependent on them. So I, most of the units had, they actually took, you know, it serious, and the work was done in-house as opposed to doing it externally.
That's the most important part of the response. Thank you, President.
In fact, Chair, we've also appointed the legal manager as well. So he's going to be starting on the 1st or the 2nd of April. So that's part of our cost reduction measures. The one, Chair, on the breakdown, if we are allowed, we can just provide it in writing. Except to say, in response to Inqeba, one, the issue is obviously going to be finalized tomorrow. But how we were cited, we were cited in terms of the Act. The Act talks about the FPB led by the CEO, who then implements the classification. Then there is the council, which is led by the chairperson of the board, who are in charge in terms of the drafting and the oversight of the classification. And then the appeals tribunal, who would have been the one who took the final decision. So that's how the matter was handled. I mean, obviously I wouldn't want to talk about what then transpired, but there was a position by the appeals tribunal, and we had a different position in terms of our classification, our work, informed by the Act, as well as the classification guidelines that we use, because it's a very scientific process that we follow in terms of classifying these things. So we had to, unfortunately, we are not defending anything, we've never defended anything. We had to then give the court our own classification rating, how we came up to the classification rating that we had. So that's the part of it.
Chairperson, another thing is that we are not really against what the tribunal has done. We do understand that it's what they are supposed to do, and we make sure that they should understand that we have got something to do. That doesn't mean that they should support us. Not to say that we want them to support us or want us to support them. If there's a problem, the problem is there. And what we should do is to sit down and solve the problem, both of us. And another thing is that we're saying, why this appeals tribunal are not on their own instead of being under another entity? Because it becomes a problem. Remember, what we do is not what they do. And what they believe in is what we don't believe in. That's the problem. But if we can sit down and talk before, I think we can really come out with one solution. Not that we are fighting with them. We are not. We are not fighting with them. And they are not fighting with us. We are one. But it seems that there's somewhere where we don't understand each other. Thank you.
If I may add, we incur costs both in terms of as an institution, because that's a risk that we sit with. If someone take their decision to court, as they've done now, we have had to pay for their legal costs. We have also had to pay for our own legal costs. because I don't think that the legislation itself envisaged a situation where that decision would be contested. The decision of the appeals tribunal, for instance, is the final decision of the board. If there are certain things that we feel or that they would have done according to what the classification guideline requires. But I think at this stage, the court, the case is before the court, and let's wait for the outcome for tomorrow.
Are you done with your responses? I'll give the Deputy Minister later for comments on all of that.
Maybe one last one around the coaching. The coaching target is going to be achieved as at the end of 17-18. So in terms of the way in which it was structured, it was supposed to be achieved in quarter two, but we only achieved it in quarter four because the universities was delaying in terms of submitting the SBDI forms, but it's sorted now, it's going to be achieved.
Okay, Funda.
Thanks, Chair. Since we have the CFO here, last time when we had the FPB board, we requested what the legal costs were of removing the former CEO. You recall that they hired a law firm, and then there were two external bodies that were hired in this whole process. So can we be given, besides the handshake that was decided, what were the legal costs of hiring Bowman Gilfillan? And I can't now, from the top of my mind, remember what the other external body was that was hired. So what were those costs involved in that process?
Honorable Clark.
Thanks, Chair. Even though I didn't hear anything on trademark policy review, but maybe they will say something on that. I think, pending your ruling, Chair, I think we welcome the fact that perhaps the breakdown of success stories with regard to provinces will be sent. I think our task in support to Minister is for this government to tell success stories to our constituencies, which we would want to have it reflected per provinces in terms of category of youth and so on. Just for record keeping, Chair, as the Deputy Chair highlight the fact that he had a problem with the staff with regard to quarter two report of quarter three, one of the response would want to respond to us to say reflection of how youth was sourced and so on will come to quarter four. Are we discussing quarter three or two? Just for purpose of proper recording, because you aren't in agreement as well. That's
okay. Surely you heard that. But I think the sector of the committee, the support staff, these matters that we say this we want in the next meeting must be properly captured. Sedi was correct, so that when we come back again, we start there and say these are the issues, even before reporting on other things on our club, we say these are the things that you said we must come back with and all of that. It's a responsibility of the administration to keep on communicating with each other. Honorable Mantisha?
Perhaps I should rephrase the question that I raised earlier, Chairperson. I said in the ordinary the paper that you send us, not the...
That's the research analysis.
Yes.
The committee research analysis.
Yes.
Do you hear me, or Matish? That document is prepared by our researcher for us.
Okay.
As committee members.
So...
It's an analysis of the document. So the issues to be considered by the committee are issues that we are raising.
Okay, they then still have got to respond to that in other ways. I wish to understand. If that is the case, then that's why.
It's issues that must raise with them.
I see.
The issues that have to be considered is just the guide from the researcher to say these are the issues emanating from the...
I take your point, Jefferson. Thank you very much. Okay.
Ask
the
question.
Chair, just before we finish with the FBB, I just want to find out, we were supposed to go and do oversight at their premises and also meet with the board with regards to this issue on the CEO and COO. I just want to find out, is that now going to be happening? When is that going to happen? And is it still going to happen?
We'll now wait for the responses
and then we step off this presentation. Are there any other issues, members?
No, just
Bob, I can see you.
Yeah, just one issue. I heard a service consultant was working with them. Service consultant recommended another person, then they proceeded working with that person. Was it a procedural appointment? It's like a friend can say a friend must work, then it's fine.
Thank you.
Respond, and then after your responses, I'll hand over to the Deputy Minister, and then we're done with FPB. In terms of the oversight, Honourable Funday, because of Angiti, we request from the House Chair for us to go for oversight. This week, remember, we're supposed to be there. That was denied because of budget. Remember, the financial year starts from April. So the Chair was saying, for this financial year, there is no budget. And then we'll have to put it in our agenda from April, May, June, that period.
Okay.
We must go. Definitely must go there.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think the comfort that members must sit with is that the appointment was a 6 months, 5 months appointment. And procedurally, we followed the right procedures. And Chair, the other one around the youth that we have appointed in terms of the hackathon, we'll also then give it to you in writing, so that we also give factual information and factual account of what the breakdown by province as well as the hackathon. But we're working with Innovation Hub. We'll find that some people, although a person may be coming from the Eastern Cape, for instance, but they will be based in Joburg, because then it's different institutions that we work with. Okay, and then my colleague will then respond to it.
Thank you, Chair. The question around the trademark policy. We had a trademark policy that was only focused on the labeling of physical DVDs. Now that we have implemented the online content regulation system, we needed to review that policy so that it accommodates and gets aligned to the trademark, to the online regulation policy. That is why in the report you have the review of the review. Thank you.
Deputy Minister, over to you.
Over and above the settlement amount that we paid to the former CEO, we paid the Sikela Kabiso amount for investigation. I think it was around 450,000, and we also pay Bowman for legal cost. I think it was about 190,000. Thank you.
How much was it? How much was it?
Which one? 450,000 for Sigela, and then about 190,000 for the legal cost.
190,000
yeah.
Legal cost.
Yeah.
I don't want that about. I don't want about so much. I want the actual figure.
Chair, can I confirm just before we finish? Because I just want to give you the right amount.
Yeah. Anything else left not transferred, member? For that,
No, it's about the whether it's quarter two or quarter three. Quarter two.
Chairperson, thank you very much, and let me also thank the inputs made by honourable members. I think this exercise also assists us to strengthen from your side the oversight over the executive, but also for us to also make sure that there are mechanisms from the side of the department to strengthen our entities, because we establish entities to assist us to implement certain things. But from where I'm sitting, Chair, I can confirm the concern that members also have around the issue of board members. I have not seen, up to today, a full complement of board members of the SPB. Today is my third engagement with the SPB, and we had two occasions where we were sitting, but and I think maybe one of the things probably is the issue that some are officials working for government and so on, but I think as we go to the FPB, we'll also get to know where the challenges are, so that if there are challenges, we'll come back to the committee and indicate those kind of challenges. I think with regard to capacity challenges that members are picking up, it is our responsibility to make sure that we beef up administration and we move swiftly in ensuring that that happens. Like members said, a challenge between the FPB Council and the Tribunal, FPB and the Tribunal. I'm not sure whether it's a big thing, but we'll be able to probably, as we sit, see how we find each other. I think through the INEBA process, we picked up some few challenges around their operations, but maybe the call that we must make is that even though the process of the bill has gone through Parliament, we really need to look at the totality of that whole act and see if we can't restart the process, because the way it has been amended and amended poses a question. There should be a way that we have to look at totality of issues, and of course the outcome of the court proceedings will also assist us to look at where the shortcomings are and then be able to deal with that. So we may come back to you to look at it and then be able to deal with some of these things. Of course we'll what we normally do, and I agree with the committee, whatever that we is outstanding that we need to report on, we'll bring them in writing in 14 working days. But as we interact with the committee, the next interaction with the committee, we'll also just put it on record to say these are the things that we sent through to the secretary of the committee. and if there are still issues to follow up by yourself, we'll then take it from there. So I think that's the commitment we are also making from ourselves. We'll follow up on the issue of the staff morale and other issues that members have raised, just to get a feel of how the mood is and how we can be able to strengthen our staff in making sure that they're able to execute their responsibility. So, Chair, I leave it at that. But also let's agree that it should be standard reporting, that if we have statistics, whether we visited provinces and all those things, we must give a breakdown right away, just to say, these are the engagement we had, so many, and whatever, so that we don't go forward and backward in terms of some of those things.
Thank you, DM. We'll have to prioritize that Honorable Van Damme's issue. In our program, we must start visiting these two entities, FPB, Van Dijk, FPB and MDDA. I know it's somewhere in the program, but I think we will have to look at program so that we, coming back after Easter, we look at the, you know, the very first week, if possible. Start there, and then I'm worried about, because the minister and deputy minister were appointed some time ago, and they have never met the whole board until now. It's worrying. That is a problem. Thank you very much, FPB, Deputy Minister. We are now done with FPB. You may go well if you're leaving. And maybe we need to look at how we save money, so that if we are going to have a meeting with MDDA and FPB, we give them time, so that it's only FPB or MDDA sleeping in Cape Town, because the meeting will be 9 o'clock, so that we don't let the others sit here from 9 to upper 12 or 12. Those must leave Johannesburg in the morning for 12 o'clock. So we'll have to do that, because it will help. Yeah, it will help. Thank you very much. You may leave. You want the last word, Deputy Chair?
I thought you were just going to tell them straight away that you wouldn't come to us on the 29th because you'll be traveling to Moria, and it was going to be difficult for you to see us on the
29th. Thanks, FPB. You may leave, and then MDTA comes closer. We'll allow a minute to do that, because we'll be finalizing the ICASA chairperson issue. Sunday?
Afraid, no.
Oh, okay.
Ow,
MDDA board members, come closer with your CEO. And the secretary of the committee will be ready to give us the report, to read the report that we'll adopt.
Please, that could be in the universe. I can see you are looking so as you leave at this point, so that we can have time with
Okay.
Community Center, can you read our report that will endorse can you call Justice, can you call Kalago and Van Damme? I don't know what they are doing. Okay. Embo, you can now have the just get the chair, then twirl it. I'm just I'm fine about a week. Okay, we may proceed. The members will find us on the way. Community Center, can you read the report? This is the report that we'll be endorsing and taking it to the House as our report.
Thank you, Chairperson.
Read it. You are a fast speaker, so just walk with us properly. Don't have to go 160 kilometers per hour.
Thank you, Chairperson. This is the report of the Portfolio Committee on Communications on the removal of Mr. Manyaba Ruben Mohlaluga as a councillor and council chairperson of the Independent Communications Authority of South Africa, dated 27 March 2018. The Portfolio Committee on Communications, having considered the request from the Minister of Communications to begin with the removal process of Mr. Ruben Manyaba Mohlaluga as a councillor and council chairperson of the Independent Communications Authority of South Africa, reports as follows. On 7 February 2018, the committee received a letter from the Minister of Communications informing the Assembly that the chairperson of ICASA, Mr. R. M. Mohlaluga, was convicted on charges of fraud and money laundering on 15 January 2018. And requesting the Assembly to commence with the process of removing the councillor from office. On 15 January 2018, Mr. Mohlaluga was convicted on a charge of fraud and the offence of contravening the provisions of Section 4 of the Prevention of Organised Crime Act 1998, Act 121 of 1998 in the Regional Court for Gauteng held at Pretoria. The conviction stemmed from an allegation that Mr. Mohlaluga and five others defrauded the Land and Agricultural Bank of South Africa of an amount of 6 million rand that was meant for the benefit of farm workers and emerging farmers. On 27 February 2018, the committee resolved to commence with the removal process in terms of Section 8 of the Independent Communications Authority of South Africa Act 13 of 2000. Section 81F of the ICASA Act provides for the removal of a councillor who has become disqualified in terms of Section 61J of the Act, which lists the offence of fraud as a disqualification criteria. On 28 February 2018, the committee invited Mr. Mohlaluga to make written representations as to why he should not be removed as chairperson and councillor of ICASA. Mr. Mohlaluga submitted the required written representation via his attorney. On 27 March 2018, the committee considered the representations that were received from Mr. Mohlaluga.
The committee notes that Mr. Mutlaluga admitted in court that he received money that was paid by the Land and Agriculture Bank to the Dinkwako project to be used for the benefit of black emerging farmers. The committee notes further that Mr. Mutlaluga admitted to using the money inter alia to purchase two luxury vehicles, and that despite his contention that the transaction was a loan agreement, there was no factual evidence to support same. The committee agrees that the purpose of providing an opportunity to make representations is not to debate the merits of the conviction. The committee has accepted that there is a guilty verdict that triggers the removal process. The committee is not a court of law which has the expertise to determine guilt or innocence. Representations are invited to consider why, despite a conviction, a councillor should not be removed. In this regard, the committee has considered the nature of the fraud, the amount of money involved, the person or entity who suffered the loss, and whether collectively these issues create a lack of trust in Mr. Mutlaluga. The committee agrees that the fraud conviction is extremely serious and involves a substantial amount of public money that was meant to be used for the benefit of emerging black farmers. It notes further that the actions occurred at a time when Mr. Mutlaluga was serving in Parliament as the chairperson of the Portfolio Committee on Agriculture. This raises serious concerns in respect of conflict of interest that are relevant whether the transaction was fraudulent or not. The committee has considered Mr. Mutlaluga's request to make further representations based on the events that transpired in the committee meeting on 27 February 2018. The committee is of the view that the record of the meeting will not serve to enhance the representations in any way, and the request is rejected. The committee has further considered Mr. Mutlaluga's request to be placed on suspension pending the outcome of the appeal process. The committee is of the view that this solution has adverse cost implications and will affect the stability of the ICASA Council and does not support the recommendation. The committee is of the view that based on the above, there is a reasonable apprehension that Mr. Mutlaluga cannot continue in a position of trust and authority. The committee recommends to the National Assembly that Mr. Mutlaluga be removed from his position as a councillor and council chairperson of ICASA in terms of the removal process provided for in Section 8 of the ICASA Act. Thank you, Chairperson. That was the report.
I think you listened to the report, members. Honorable Teddy?
I think the report is well kept. The only reservation I have is on aspects that are tempting to go into the demerits of the case, as we have always been saying that we are not a court of law. And I'll appreciate if those issues do not form part of the report. I just don't remember some of those issues, but issues where you were trying to be specific in terms of what transpired. A person acknowledging all those things, I have reservations with those aspects. But otherwise, I'm happy with the report, except the few instances where we're trying to go deeper into the case.
Okay. Maybe we need to avoid that, but what we don't need to avoid is where we note the committee knows that Mr. Mutlaluga admitted in court. We are not saying that he is guilty, but we note that because we do have the judgment, we note that he admitted in court. I agree with you, but I think where we need to have issues that we note from the judgment, we need to reflect them. We may not reflect all, but things, issues that we think are necessary for us to note from the judgment itself. Anyway, Honorable Fanda.
Thanks, Chair. I think I agree with both of you. I just don't want us to write a whole long thing which might leave certain legal loopholes which some enterprising lawyer might find some gap to enter into. I think we need to be as little as possible in that resolution. We can note, as you say, that he in fact himself admitted in court. And then the other detail I think we mustn't go into. We can do that when we debate in the House as members. But for us as a resolution, it must be as, as uncolorful as possible, very simple and basically based just on what the law says and not give any opinions.
So minimized to go to much detail. On those aspects that Teddy was saying. Comment, Pat?
Oh, thanks, sir. We rejected the issue of him recommending suspension while he could still end, but do we want to put it there, having admitted? So, because perhaps one other lawyer would say, are we that structure to reject? So, I was saying maybe that thing. We agree, we are not agreeing, but why we put it? Because it could be picked. Okay.
Okay, anything else? You leave the other people from both sides and comment. I think the thrust of the
report is accurate, but I think we say minimize. On those issues that are getting too much into detail of the case itself.
Yeah.
Ma'am, Ibrahim?
Chair, we can certainly remove the two paragraphs relating to the admissions that happened in court. The reason why we refer to the request for suspension is that certainly the committee could have taken a decision that it will hold the process over until such time as the appeal is finalized. But the decision is that you are not prepared to do that. So I thought it would be useful to record the response of the committee in that regard. But otherwise, we can do it separately and include it in a letter directly to Mr. Moshla Aloha, if you would prefer for it not to be in the report as an additional matter, and then we simply restrict the report to the issue of removal.
I think we must, you know, the process must just be done in the National Assembly, and other things we just minimize getting into other things.
No, I think that's exactly what we're saying, because it's not us who convicted you. He was convicted by a court of law. So for us to get into the integrities of what transpired that led to the conviction, that's the only part that is a bit problematic. But I think she has noted those specific issues that need to be removed. But otherwise, we agree with the report.
And that, dear?
Was it not his request to say, rather suspend me while I'm dealing with this? Because I had thought the reason why you are responding to the suspension is precisely because he had requested the committee to take that route of suspension. But if the committee says you don't have to respond to it, it's fine. But I thought that was the reason why you were responding on his request.
Yeah. Okay. Comrade Bantisha.
Permit me to agree with you and the other members, Chairperson, that the issue of removal should be the point. We therefore support the removal process, and we close there. Thank you very much.
Okay. This issue Kaba and the Deputy Minister is of suspension. Do you want? You know, in his submission, he talks about suspension. Hence, the reflection on suspension. Do we want to ignore that? Acting DJ, I can see you want. Oh, I thought, I understand. You know this thing of legal people. We want to hear so that legally this thing is tight. Comrade Lebo?
No, but Chair, I thought our position, if I remember, suspension is not my position.
Yeah.
I thought that ours is the removal.
Yeah.
That's what I want to be relaxed. Okay. Ours is removal. Suspension, what it does, pleading to the ministry, or oh, that does not need
because
us at all.
Because it's not ours.
It's not ours.
We don't suspend.
Yeah. Ours is removal.
That plea can go to the minister. You're right, Lerum. Can be addressed by the minister. Till now, let's just focus on removal. Okay. Can we just reflect?
Chair, the minister wants the National Assembly resolved to remove the chairperson. The minister then does not have an election at all. The minister must. So the issue of suspension will not come in at all. It is actually only this committee that can consider whether it would want to recommend to the minister to suspend pending the outcome of this process. But if the process is indeed being concluded today, then there is no reason and the suspension falls out. Chair, I suggest that perhaps we just respond in a letter on those two aspects. One, that we reject the issue of the request to be suspended, and the other one on the further representations, and we take that out of the report to the NA.
Okay, I think the thrust of the report itself is agreed to by the committee, but I think we must do it formally. Because this is the report of the committee, we must move and second it so that we are done with it and it's going to the National Assembly.
Are you okay?
Chair, I'm moving with the adoption with amendments.
Funda, support it. Done? Beautiful. Then you are released. You are not suspended, you are removed. MDDA, Deputy Minister, that's your time, your presentation.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. I am accompanied by three members of the board, the acting chair and two other members. You took my paper and I wanted to introduce them. It's three members of the...
So,
what is the other one? Why? Oh, and the acting CEO, Honorable Chair, who's with me. Of course, we have had a short engagement with MDDA. We will have a full visit of the entity early next week. We had thought we would use your oversight visit that was scheduled so that we are able to engage thoroughly between ourselves and yourselves, but the fact that you have postponed, we will still continue because it is that time of us going to various entities just to know and understand the challenges they are going through and how best can we assist and give support. The reality of the matter is that we've got four members of the MDDA board remaining. There's some challenge of whether the fifth member, who is the shareholder representative, whether is still valid or not, which we are attending to. There's also the challenge of what Honorable Van Dam was also raising, and yourselves as members, that a lot of people are on acting positions. The same applies with MDDA, something that we'll also attend to very, very quickly. So we are looking into all those things. Of course, there has been engagement and representation between yourselves and the MDDA on the challenges that you have been looking at. All what we are also going to look and focus on is how we make community radio stations sustainable. Not only that, because they are also responsible for local media as well as TVs, the regulatory framework around that and the funding model around that. So at some point we'll come back to you just to present and show how best do we look at supporting all those things, especially because there are calls coming in, people saying community radio stations don't have studios and all those things. So we would want to have, a model of a studio of how a community radio station must look like, and then be able to look at the funding model that looks at all those things and so on. So it's part of the things that we'll be looking at. But we'll look at regulatory framework and other challenges that the MDDA may be faced with. Top on the agenda will be the board issue and strengthening the executive as well. Thank you very much. So allow me, Chair, to invite the acting chairperson of the board as well as the acting CEO to make presentations to the committee.
Where is the acting CEO? Are you acting CEO?
Okay. Thank you. Firstly, thank you for the invitation to come and present our quarter two performance report. I think the chairperson, the members, the deputy minister, and the acting DG. We understood the invite to invite the chairperson and the acting CEO. However, I extended the invite to the board members who are based in Cape Town to join me. Dr. Nombeko Mbangwa couldn't make it. Martina De La Toya was here this morning, but has since left due to logistical issues, flights, etc., etc. I will be meeting them tomorrow for a board meeting scheduled tomorrow in Johannesburg. So our apologies for her leaving early. With me, I've got the acting CEO, Mr. William Mallory, who was sent to us by the DOC. I've also got Cheryl Lenovich, who worked on the quarter two report, because there's been a bit of lag, and that's why I asked her to join me, because between the two of us, we have quite extensive knowledge of what happened in quarter two, as opposed to where we are now. I will invite, we're here as a team, and I'll invite them then to present the quarter two report to the committee. Thank you.
No, Mr. Kale, let's just that on those who were here and left, their board members were here and they left because of logistics, as you say. But when the invitation comes, it comes to the acting chair and the CEO for the board of MDD to come before the committee. The question of people invited, it's you and the acting CEO. It's just that the correspondence comes to you and them. Not to say it's only two of you. It has never been like that. Although we're trying to minimize a delegation, but we can't call the chair and the CEO only to come appear before the committee. If we want to do that, we'll specify. We'll be very, very specific. But explain this to people who are here because of flights and they left again without attending the meeting.
As indicated, firstly, our apologies if we did not understand the correspondence correctly, including the earlier reference in the committee meeting which I attended, where we were scathed for having a huge delegation. But I will put that aside. I think we didn't understand, and we apologize. With regards to the board member that was here, as I indicated, I extended the invitation to the board members that are in Cape Town, and there are two. So no one needed to fly from wherever to be here. That was the inference, but I think I wasn't that clear. Thank you.
No, that's fine. Maybe the question of communication, but I think we need to, when it's done, we just need to be very specific. We don't want the huge delegation, but I think we need more than two people, obviously. Yes.
Okay. Thank you. I'll hand over to the team.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Deputy Minister and committee members. I'll just go through the presentation on behalf of the MDBA as I was deeply involved in preparing these reports. The first slide just deals with the issues raised by the Portfolio Committee at the last quarterly reporting that we did, which was Q4 of 2016-17. The vacancy rate came under the spotlight, and we have made steady progress in filling the vacancies, maybe not as fast as desired, but at the end of Q2 we were up to 67%, and we have made a further two appointments of staff who will be starting in April, one of whom is disabled because we did have an issue with how they get representation, and we're trying to make a fair representation of all groupings. The other issue was the performance contracts that was raised at the last quarterly report. We had all our performance contracts signed, I say by the end of Q2, they were actually signed in Q1, and we are the routine of reviewing performance according to these performance contracts quarterly reviews is in place. And then the last issue that came up strongly was the fact that many of our key performance indicators were not crafted in terms of the SMART principle, and we reviewed them intensely for the 2018, 2019 APP. In consultation with the Department of Communications, and we also asked for assistance from the AG in terms of the SMART principle. We're just turning to the highlights. I've got the highlights of Q1 and Q2. I'll raise it later, but I think it's already been raised that for a large part of this year, we've had a problem with a board not quorating. So in Q1 and Q2, we could not report any approvals of community media projects. But that doesn't mean to say that we haven't continued to support the community media sector. We've continued to disperse funds to those projects that were approved in the previous year. So in Q1 and Q2, we dispersed some 23 million rand. We also achieved an unqualified audit opinion, which means that we've had an unbroken record of unqualified audit opinions since the MDDA Act, since the MDDA commenced. We are working towards a clean audit, but we have, so that is our end goal. We appointed a permanent HR and corporate affairs manager and an assistant in Q1 and Q2, and this has had a very positive impact on the agency. I know the vacancy rate has come under a lot of spotlight, but she's also, for the first, she's implemented a much more structured human resources environment, with a number of initiatives underway to address staff concerns, from job grading through to internal communication, through to staff to benchmarking fringe benefits, etc. So it actually has had a very positive impact on the MDDA, apart from the vacancy rate. Then we also had two, so for example, we finished all staff competency assessments in Q1, and personal development plans have been drawn up, and staff have commenced going on training in terms of these personal development plans. And this was also, it's been aided and abetted by the fact that we do now have permanent HR staff. And then finally, we have two, as I mentioned, we've had a problem with a board not creating for the first two quarters of the financial year. Two new board members were appointed towards the end of Q2, after the shareholder representative, Ms. Kareem, and the publisher support service representative, Mr. Manara, from Tisa Blackstar. Then we also knew that three candidates were recommended for presidency approval, and they were appointed in October, one of whom was here. Subsequent to that, Mr. Manola, who was appointed in October, resigned as he was appointed to the NEC, and in terms of MDD Act, if you hold a political position, you can't be on the board. And then finally, as I mentioned before, we completed all staff competency assessments and personal and training has commenced. All staff commenced their training programs. Then I just did this introductory, we just did this introductory comment to try to explain the situation of the board not creating. We did manage to hold a board meeting at the end of the second quarter to approve project applications. This board meeting was held on the 29th of September, but we had to continue it in October, on the 13th of October, due to the fact that we were trying to catch up with Q1 and Q2 project applications, and obviously time constraints to deal with these applications. We needed to continue the meeting. So as a result, the Q2 project applications could not be reported on for Q2. They were held over to Q3. So they were approved basically in Q2, but obviously the ratification was not, it wasn't ratified by approved board minutes. So this has impacted very severely on our achievement of targets, because we've held over those approval, those board approvals of projects that took place on the 29th of September. And then just the final bullet, it's just the second to last bullet point. I mentioned that some of the Q2 targets you will see we've exceeded, as we are focusing on catching up on our achievement of targets in Q1. And then the final bullet point is a qualified audit opinion, which I have already mentioned. Now, if you just look at a breakdown, a holistic breakdown of our achievements of our targets, and you'll note that it's program 2, which is a major problem. That is our core mandate activity, which is grant and seed funding. And basically, because of, as I explained, the board meeting only being held on the 29th of September and then continuing into October, we could not report any of those project approvals as Q2 approvals. But they are reported in Q3, and you will note in Q3 that we exceeded many of our targets in this area as we were doing both Q2 and Q3 projects. So as a result, the NDDA had 30, we've got 44 KPIs in this annual performance plan, but 30, only 30 are applicable to Q2, and we achieved 15 of these, which means we only achieved 50% of our targets. This is an improvement over Q1, where it was 36 or 35% due, again, to the same problem of the board not correcting, and that so many of our KPIs are tied to board approval. And then in the next few slides, I've just gone through the programs. I've only quoted, I've only mentioned those key performance indicators which are applicable to Q2. So program one is our governance and administration program. It's our support program. I think what I'd like to point out here is under the programs 1.1 is human resource management. You will see that the impact of that having a structured approach to human resources is taken. We are now commencing with personal development plans, and we actually have exceeded our target for Q2. In terms of legal and regulatory affairs, it was affected to a large extent by the board not creating. One of our KPIs is to try to ensure a fast turnaround of contracts being signed with community media after board approval. And so one of our KPIs is 1 month turnaround time. We could not measure this as there were no projects approved, community media projects approved in Q1 or Q2. So we had to report it as not achieved, it's just not measurable. And then the final one is the number of MDDA policies reviewed. We review our policies annually. We have submitted them to the board this quarter, and the agreement is that we will do a proper in-depth review of all of them. But we, as I said, we couldn't get approval in Q2 as a result of the board not creating. Then turning to financial administration, it was a good performance from this area. And then the last one is sub-program 1.4, which is information management and technology. The problem, the one target not achieved there is the support given by our IT department to our broadcast media in terms of upgrading their equipment from analog to digital and installing new broadcast equipment. As we didn't have any projects, for two reasons, projects were not approved in Q1 and Q2, and we've also introduced a new system of centralized procurement for broadcast equipment. And basically, we had to go out to tender to get a panel of broadcast equipment suppliers. So this target was put on hold until that panel of broadcast equipment suppliers had been appointed. And then you'll see for Program 2, as I said, Program 2 is our core mandate, and we achieved none of the targets, basically because of not having a board forming a quorum. The one under broadcast media, which is a social engagement strategy implemented for communities using broadcast platform, that is the only one under review.
Sorry. Members, are we comfortable of looking at the time? To take the presentation as read and maybe go to questions. I'm looking at the time and we have another item. Because the document was circulated, don't worry. The document was circulated and members went through it. We can just raise questions. Unless members, you really want to spend time. Agreed?
Yeah.
Agreed. Can we, I know you wanted to make a presentation. Members, can we go to questions? I think it will help us. Honorable Teddy?
Obviously, we appreciate that you, at least this time around, you are briefing us on the issues that we raised and the work that you have done in that particular area. But one of the issues that we raised, which is not captured there, is a report on the support that municipalities and departments are giving to community radios. It's one issue that we have been raising very, very sharply. I don't know for how many times. Because our approach has been it should not be on ad hoc basis. That time, I think, I don't remember whether one of your colleagues made, or it was your GCIS colleagues, they said SASA at least has been assisting to try and utilize community radio with regards to the challenges that we're having there. But over and above that, we wanted a comprehensive report that talks to how many departments have complied to the 30% ad spend and how many continue to defy that kind of an arrangement. So we want that report. So we'll appreciate if you can just put together that report, submit it through the Office of the Chairperson. Just to say Limpopo, these are the municipalities who have for this court assisted community radios, and these are the ones who continue to do anything in that area. Chairperson, page 5, the partially achieved target is coming back, and we have raised it very sharply as well. We don't want this thing. It's either a target is achieved or not achieved. I saw it somewhere, page 5. You saw it?
It's there. I saw it somewhere. I've gone through your report.
I
know that they don't have partial achieved in their report.
Oh, this document that I have has got partially achieved. This one. There you are. Partially achieved.
This one.
I see, not achieved and partially. Is there?
No.
The other issue, Chairperson, is the issue of your first time funding for community radios. You raised it somewhere, page 8. And I'm raising this thing in the light of the moratorium. You had wanted to assist 12 community radios in that area. I think the report says you only managed 2 or so somewhere. Because our approach has been, we must spend a bigger chunk of the budget to assist community radios that were funded in the past with the infrastructure and all this, some of the issues that the Deputy Minister was raising. So that by the time we go to new community radio stations, at least we are sure.
There is a mismatch of documents here.
I can see
this black and white one. I don't know if we have all this. We have all this judgment. Because where does it come from, this one?
I'm on this one. It says 2017-2018 program performance quarter report.
Yeah, it says so. Five.
Yeah, with
both
with 13 pages, with 14 pages. That's the one that I'm playing on.
Okay, continue. So,
Chair, all I'm saying is that the budget that we have, the bigger chunk should be to assist community radios that were funded in the past, rather than to continue to approve new applications. We have raised the same matter with the CASA. There are a lot of community radios that we have assisted in the past, begging on a serious note, but we continue to launch new community radios. Very close to each other, hardly 10 kilometers away from each other, which is problematic. which is problematic. The issue of communication, Chair, is an issue that we can't overemphasize, because if you don't communicate, the other people will communicate on your behalf as an entity, and obviously they'll communicate the wrong things. So I'm saying it's important that the entity must continue to communicate. You can't rely on GCIS yourself. I think you have a communication section for sure. So that communication section, we don't feel it. So all I'm saying is that an entity that does not communicate, other people will definitely communicate on your behalf. Obviously, for wrong reasons. So the issue of irregular and fruitless and wasteful expenditure is raised by the AG, and non-compliance with laws and regulations. How far are we with regard to this particular issue? And lastly, the issue of the litigated cases. Thanks.
Okay, let's proceed, Honorable Van Dijk.
I want to start also with the vacancies on slide 2, because I'm not sure if the 67% is representing is it now more people, that is there more vacancies? They must please give us the how many vacancies there are and how many in the senior positions. And that brings me to another thing that I also want to ask. I want to know how many people are at the moment suspended in the MDDA, and if the committee, I'm not sure if the committee is aware that 3 of those people are in hospital at the moment, and I want to know on what grounds they were suspended. I also want to know that I'm not sure how you pronounce her name, the company secretary that was found to by Evolva consultation to not be appropriate for the company secretary position. If she actually did act as the CEO, and who made that decision, and also the process that was followed to appoint the secretary to the CEO. And then from my side, I would really, the situation within the MDDA is of such a concern. It doesn't matter that you get unqualified audit, but your entity is actually in shambles. So from my side, and I think from the DA side, I want to suggest that that a forensic investigation should be done with regards to the MDDA, and that we, the same way like we did with the SABC, so that the SABC board, so that we, via the SIU or via the AG or any, but that's my suggestion. And with regards to the suspensions of these people, if there's a possibility that we can get them also to come and present to the committee, because this victimization of staff of MDDA, since 2014 when we started, it hasn't stopped. And with that, I also want to suggest that we maybe suspend the chair that was part of the board chair, that was part of the previous chair's regime, because I think the problem, that's part of the problem. So that's my suggestion, that we suspend the chair, the acting chair, because and do a proper forensic investigation into the MDDA. I'll leave my other questions.
Okay, any other questions? I want us to round up by 12:05. Okay, those are the questions, but remember, members, we're still going to MDDA, Elder Grid, and FPB to be fully informed, and then we can kickstart all other processes. That's the decision of our last meeting, hence we're supposed to be there this week. And then once, again, as we said, all that, that exercise will inform us when we take this route of investigating this two entities. In fact, it's two of them. It's MDDA and FPB. So that is why we need to fast track our checking. How many weeks are we breaking is 2 weeks, and definitely we'll have to prioritize that. Those are the questions.
Thank you. I will attempt to answer a few questions, and the team will also answer the questions. However, we appreciate that the chair has indicated that the committee will come to the MDGA and therefore will deal with all with all these issues at that time. With regards to the support of the municipalities and provincial governments to community media, we do have a report in that regard, but since it's been asked for, I think we should, with GCIS, then collate it and share that information. Although, as you might know, it is not really extensive support as we'd want. But we'll share the report once it's been collated. I'll ensure that happens. The same applies to first-time funding. With regards to the moratorium, there was a backlog of those applications that had been received before the end of the moratorium by ICASA. So we had to deal with those as well. But we are focused in assisting especially those success stories which have been on air for a long time, and that I must emphasize, not just community radio, it's also print, because we cover print TV and now specifically digital, since we are in the fourth industrial revolution. With regards to the AG flagging of irregular expenditure, I think it had to do with broadcast equipment. That matter was taken back on tender. No funds had been utilized in that regard. The matter was that was taken back on tender in order to get manufacturers to be a panel, those who can supply broadcast equipment to 12 outstanding entities which already have been approved for such equipment funding. So it is at the tender stage and it should be finalized shortly. So that's where that is. With regards to the suspensions, on my records, we've got one individual that is suspended in the procurement space, and that is an HR issue. There's an investigation and inquiry, and that's where, as a board chair, the board and anyone else, we cannot really interfere with that matter, because it's an ongoing matter. I do not know that that individual is in hospital, and my sympathies to them. I do know of one staff member that is in hospital, but they are not suspended. So in effect, they are on sick leave. However, if my information is incorrect, we can check the records. The one other staff member who was in sick leave, Tembi Mebo, who was in sick leave for a while, is happily back at the office in her position, and we're quite grateful for that. I don't know if I haven't covered all the questions.
CEO?
Thank you. Mr. Weller.
No, thank you very much, Chair. I think the acting chair of the board covered the issues as raised, especially on the issue of the suspension. It's only one member of the staff who is on suspension, and the process of the investigation as is just about to be completed. The only outstanding matter on that is the company to interview the involved staff members. And I think, as honorable members indicated, the interview with the involved staff members has not yet been concluded, because at one stage the involved staff member was not well, and we didn't accept a situation where an unwell person is subjected to that interview. However, on the issue of the involved staff member being in hospital, I think the honourable member is correct. At one stage, she was in hospital. She was discharged. Then she went back. That was the information that we have. Thanks.
Okay. Honourable Van Dijk.
Chair, I just want to
I'm not sure we are going to make progress with MDA. And I think we really need to leave it here and fast track the issue of going to MDA so that we can start all these processes when we indict with the board, with everybody there. And then we start our processes. Yes, ma'am, and that will be the end.
Chair, I might just mention that the one person specifically that I was now referring to, Lindy Nkosi, he wasn't suspended yet, but he was given 5 days to respond why he shouldn't be suspended. So it's not to say that, so that's my point. That's why I want these people that are under threat, if I can put it like that, to also have an opportunity to come and tell us. So that's why I think it's important that we do the inquiry or the investigation. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. Members, Deputy Minister, I don't think we must go beyond this point.
Yeah.
I will assure, we'll have to ensure that we prioritize the oversight, all of them. We just need to spend time with MDA and FPP. And I know members, they would love to interact with the staff members, as we did last time. Thank you very much. We interacted with your presentation. That is why I have to stop. Yes, we see a lot of things that are progress, but we just need to interact with you on the spot. Thank you very much. You know, unfortunately, we are going for a break on Thursday. We start, and I think we'll spend about 2 weeks out away from Parliament. Is it 2 weeks?
Mm-hmm.
Yes. So we'll be coming back mid April, around the 17th. So that's the week we'll have to consider going there. Thank you very much. You may be released, and the last item which will deal is discussions around the outer report, and the discussions are in relation to the correspondence that we received from the Deputy Speaker last year. For us to conduct an inquiry on these matters that are reflected in the outer report. And I just want to remind members that having gone through some areas of the report, can I do that, members, as MDA is going out? That's on outer. The report shows that during the course of July and August 2014, following the appointment of Minister Mtambi, personally sent emails to Tony Gupta on confidential matters of national government policy and on the assistance she wanted from him to assume powers which were at the time assigned to Minister of Postal of Telecommunications. On the 25th, Minister Mtambi sent 2 emails to Mr. Chola, which is C-H-A-W-L-A. It can be Chola or Chawla. In the first email, with the subject line Proclamation New July 18. These are the cabinet matters that former Minister Mtambi is sending to people outside cabinet.
she wrote, these sections must be transferred to the Minister of Communications, a document describing the statutory provision to which she referred was attached to the emails under the file name. This is a pretty long document. I think members have gone through. And it's what you can deduce from the outer report is that she sent emails to Gupta's and on matters that are of the executive and all of that. And then the instruction is that we must conduct, on those basis, we must conduct inquiry. That's what the letter of the deputy minister says. Of the deputy speaker says. And earlier we thought the matter must be looked at properly by the committee so that we take a decision that is proper for the committee. Whether it's or the other matters, if you go through members at the outer report, the other matters are matters that the ad hoc committee on SABC the ad hoc committee dealt with and they emerged from that report of the ad hoc committee. And I think members must also look at it from two angles. The question of the minister violating the issues of confidentiality of the executive, which may be referred to as issues of ethics, but also look at it which direction we want to go. There are two directions here. It's the inquiry, but in terms of, on the basis of violating the confidentiality of the executive, it falls directly to the ethics. And members in discussing this matter must have those two issues in mind so that we know what we're doing. I'm talking about going through the outer report and talking about how we can manage or we can deal with the issue. Honourable Fandam.
Thanks, Chair. I am aware that there's another inquiry we already agreed to, and that's the inquiry on the MDDA. Now, that inquiry, we agreed on it on the basis that it would look into the fitness of the then chair to hold office. Now, the term of that chair has now expired. The term of the Honourable current chairperson has expired. Therefore, that renders that inquiry pointless because those people have now left office. What Honourable Van Dijk suggested earlier, I think, is the route we must take in terms of the MDDA. What the SABC, the new SABC board has done. They've said they've found all these issues, they've handed them over to the SIU, and the SIU is investigating. So the issues that we had concerns about at the MDDA, I believe, should be tackled the same route. The board must call in the SIU, they must call in the AG, they must call in whatever entity. But but this inquiry must absolutely go ahead. It goes beyond the minister just sending those emails to the Guptas. It is a much broader issue that relates firstly to the SABC archives. It relates to the News 24 story in the matter that's actually currently before ICASA about payments that were made to ANN7. I think it's a far broader issue. It does not relate only to sending emails. And I think the public expects it of us, just like the Public Enterprises Committee is conducting an inquiry into ESCOM. It expects us to conduct an inquiry as this committee into a matter that was put before us. I do not believe that the issue of time is one that we can use as an excuse. It's an inquiry that won't take weeks and weeks and weeks. It's very few people we need to call. It's the minister, it's multi-choice. We can discuss that. But I don't think it will take more than a week, and we most certainly have time in our agenda to put that through. So I do not think it's a matter that can be quite simply resolved with taking it to the Ethics Committee. That could perhaps be, after our inquiry, be a recommendation that we make that the Ethics Committee must look into it. But we must, I believe, go through the inquiry. We cannot simply wash our hands and give it to the Ethics Committee. We must go through the inquiry. We must call all the relevant witnesses that have to testify on this matter. And that's our position, Chair.
No, that's fine. The two routes I've outlined, the committee must discuss so that we are clear on what we are doing. Honorable Kalako.
Chair,
I'm still not here on that. Is why even that letter of the speaker is vague. That is why you had to go back to, because the issues raised by Outer, I think it some of especially related to Mthambi, they even opened a case. They've opened a case on that issue, especially around the cabinet. So I don't really understand. We do inquiry. All the other issues related to multi-choice, related to Mthambi's relation with a multi-choice, and including both, all those issues were dealt with by inquiry. Up to the level where Mthambi was found having misled or lied, what I can't understand, why Parliament is a, if you want to come with the inquiry, the Office of the Speaker have a responsibility. Mthambi have lied in the ad hoc committee inquiry, and their recommendations, their acts to deal with those problems. Why is it taking rounds? It's secondly, Chair, the outer thing. It's a straight case, cabinet confidentiality, again the legislation, the code of conduct and ethics of the cabinet itself. Why should they send it to us to when are we going to act? Well, it's just simple questions. Take somebody to prison. You have broken this law. It's clear, it's documented. Yes, that's the records. Why do you inquire on that instead of putting somebody to prison? The question of, again, the question, for instance, of state capture. All matters of state capture. It doesn't stop us, of course, from this committee to call any entity and any minister. We go through issues. Where my problem is, Chair, is when we want to make an inquiry. There's Zondo Commission of Inquiry, which is dealing with exactly these same issues. It's like the issues which are dealt by public enterprise. Those issues are going to end up in that Zondo again. So to me, I don't have a problem that put, as earlier the members have suggested, put the forensic when you deal with MDDA. We call them, we get into thoroughness. But until I can be convinced, what are you inquiring on Mthambi who have just broken the laws of Nanka? Mthambi must go to prison. Yes, must go to prison. It's a simple thing. The code of ethics is, I mean, the code of conduct conducting governing government, cabinet members, is clear, it's there. And it's proved. Outer, what is good with Outer? Outer has got evidence, it's proved, it's there. Why are you inquiring when the evidence is there? Charge the person. Must go to prison. She lied. You're sitting there in the inquiry. All that is on record.
Why should we go around? The report of the ad hoc committee is there. Said she lied and did this. When are we charging these people? Why are we going around? To me, Chair, I think to me, I get what doesn't stop us to get into department on many issues, because it's going to help us in the long term. But just put an inquiry on issues which is clear, doesn't need it? It has been investigated, it has been exposed, is there. I don't think that will be wasting even parliamentary resources. Put the person in prison. There's the laws.
Okay, Honorable Tab.
Okay, thanks, Chair. Maybe even I may be having a first bite on the matter, Chair. But my understanding would be, if truly we have the speaker's letter may have not been clear on us, surely that will require us to relook to the request which is given to the committee. The other matter, Chair, maybe whom we can clarify may on could be, if there are other institutions busy on this matter inquiring, why will this committee join in as well? And then lastly, Chair, perhaps when we have best are able to respond, when we are best able to respond to these two, I think then it will require to us as a committee, like as we did with the PBF, we didn't want to be judgmental on people to say they are guilty or what. Perhaps our role needs to be carefully looked, if can we really arrive at that kind of a decision. Ours in how we work perhaps could be to do a recommendation to minister, our minister, on wherein she may come in on this matter. So perhaps I would urge maybe colleagues for be cautionary on judging before we could, because we cannot play that role. So perhaps those could be clarities I could be asking for or be enlightened on as I'm taking a first bite on this matter. Yeah. Thanks, sir.
Just to recap, before you come on our funder, correctly, so Honorable Kalako is saying, yes, as I said, there is a clear report of out on how Member Mutambi violated confidentiality of the cabinet. It falls directly to ethics. Two, you were sitting in ad hoc. Mutambi was called, SABC, Mutambi was called, going through the reports of the ad hoc committee and recommendation, and a lot in relation to what she did and all of that. So there is a lot of evidence that Parliament must, because the recommendation of ad hoc committee, implementation of the recommendations is the responsibility of that office, of the Speaker. Now, where are we in terms of that? Again, the outer is very specific in terms of what she did. As a minister there, therefore, all those issues are issues that in my view, and I think in others' view, that the Parliament should refer those issues to ethics. There is ethics committee in Parliament. Refer those issues because they fall within that. But lastly, there is this, what Honorable Kalako is saying, Zondo. You see, there are a lot. It doesn't stop this committee when the committee so feels. As a former minister and a member of parliament, still a member, to call any member to come and sit here, not necessarily if there are issues that we may identify as the committee to say, but we must discuss and agree on those issues. It must not be issues of ethics. It must not be issues that you dealt with in the ad hoc. And all of that. Those issues, I really think they must go back to that office of the Speaker so that we do the right thing as Parliament. Honourable Van Damme and Honourable Patricia.
Thanks, Chair. Honourable Galoko and I agree on one thing. We agree that Honourable Tambi must go to jail. But what we don't agree with is two issues. We must separate the SABC inquiry from this, what came from the Gupta leaks. The SABC inquiry did not look at that email. That was new evidence. The SABC inquiry had a resolution that the Speaker's office must firstly investigate and lay charges against individuals who misled Parliament. We resolved as this committee to call the Speaker here to come and explain what she has done, because we're not sure whether the report that was tabled before us was the original one, whether it was amended. That was on the program and that was removed. So on our side as the committee, we have failed to impress it upon the Speaker to lay those charges. She has sat on her hands and we have sat on our hands. So then if we believe that charges must be laid against Mutambi, then a letter must come from this committee saying, hello, Speaker, you have a report that said lay charges against Mutambi. It's been months. Why hasn't that happened? If indeed it is our belief that charges must be laid against her, then we must make it very clear to the office of the Speaker that charges must follow. Now, the issue of the ALTA report, that was not dealt with in the SABC inquiry. I sat in that inquiry, as members have correctly pointed out. That letter dealt with digital migration, dealt with the multi-choice contract relating to ANN7. It dealt with an issue that we agreed as a committee would deal with. We agreed that we're going to call ICASA. We agreed that we're going to call multi-choice. We agreed that we're going to call ANN7. And then without explanation, that was taken off the program. Why? I think we need to continue with the inquiry. It is beyond just that email. It leads into other matters. So if there's no appetite for an inquiry, can we then at first instance call multi-choice, call ANN7, call ICASA like we agreed, have that meeting, and then decide whether or not an inquiry is needed? But I'm not happy with the idea that we just throw it to the Ethics Committee. It is far broader than the Ethics Committee. It's not simply just about that email and her breaking cabinet confidentiality. It leads into issues that fall under our oversight. It deals with issues about ICASA, which falls under our oversight. So I think first step, write to the Speaker's office and say, where are those charges? Second instance, we all agreed in this committee, it's urgent, we must absolutely do it, and then it disappeared from the program. Call multi-choice, call ANN7, call ICASA, call Mutambi. Let's have a meeting on one day, and then from that, see if an inquiry is needed. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you very much, Comrade Matisha.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'm quite happy we all are agreeing that we are dealing here with a terrible kind of situation. We're talking about the extreme level of corruption, and we all are agreed and we must deal with this. Now, all proper processes, in my thinking, were followed. We therefore recommend a very harsh punishment. We actually from our side recommend the execution of the member. Execution may, inter alia, mean the removal of the member from this parliament, etc. I think these are some of the things that we need to talk about. We're talking here about extreme levels of corruption, where a person has and must return the resources of the people of South Africa. I have gone through the letter that was sent to us by the Deputy Speaker. But permit me to agree with the with my member here, our member here, that yes, we have gone through this, yes, we're coming up with this resolution, but that does not imply that this member may not be involved in yet other things linked with this. And I therefore agree with the other members that yes, we execute this member politically. Yes, we say that this member, if it is feasible, must go to jail. We recommend that. But then I would plead that we again look into any other thing that may be linked up with this, because there obviously are many. Once you talk about Gupta and so on and so on, I mean, OTA has actually raised this, and the Deputy Speaker has written this to us so that we then can be able to look into this thing. I think it's a very serious problem, and I think we as a unit, Chairperson, under yourself, need to rise and take a decision. This person cannot represent the people of South Africa. Thank you.
It will be Kaba, Sedi, and Sandam.
Yeah, thanks, Chair. I think, Chair, as the committee, perhaps our responsibility is not to be a commission, because the approach, supposedly, it's like we would want to act like a commission. Yeah, I think, Chair, I would rise to support your proposal to say the matter be referred to Ethics Committee. I think we have identified that problem. Secondly, Chair, also to say, if need be, Honorable Mthambi may then come and do a presentation to the committee, not these other ones. Thanks, sir.
You're saying the small one, Pandam? Let's start with you and then come.
Small one, Chair. Zondo Commission does not replace the work of Parliament. If we're going to use the Zondo Commission inquiry, then we must go to the, then the Public Enterprises Committee must stop their work because of the Zondo Commission. The Zondo Commission does not mean that Parliament must abrogate its role of oversight and wait for the Zondo Commission. The Public Enterprises has started their inquiry. They can't stop it now because of the Zondo Commission, and the similar argument applies to us. So I don't buy the Zondo Commission argument. Chair, we must do our work. We're Parliament. We're separate institutions.
You want to respond to people?
No.
You see, yeah, okay, said, and then Kalago, because we must summarize this thing and conclude it.
Okay, I think you will remember the interim board of the SABC when they came to present to us how they are processing the recommendations of the Adwa Committee. They stated very, very clearly that when they looked at the recommendations, there are those that, in their view, belong to the interim board, and there are those that belong to Parliament. Yes. The committee then took a decision, a well-informed decision, that those that belong to Parliament, we are referring them to the office of the Speaker for processing in terms of how best that can be handled. So that's why I agree with the approach which says it will be wrong for us to go the route of the inquiry on the very same matters which have been processed already.
Okay.
by the interim board. Let's mandate your office, Honorable Chair, to go back to the office of the Speaker and try and explain why we think the route of the inquiry is not the correct route to process an issue that has already been processed again by a parliamentary committee on the same matter, because we can't have two parallel processes on an issue that has already been processed by an outdoor committee by the same parliament. So all we are saying is we are mandating your office chairperson to go back to the funeral speaker and try and present why we think the route of the inquiry is not the correct route to deal with the issue of former Minister Mukande.
Chair, just lastly, in summary also, we are a government here, Chair. We can't act as if Zondo Commission is not part. In fact, at the end of the day, that Zondo Commission reports to this parliament, including that cabinet or whoever constituted it. At the end of the day, all that report will come here. We can't behave as if this committee and other committees, when there's an institution, it's exactly, I want to repeat this, my colleague, it's exactly the same issues. Let's come to what exactly we're saying. Public enterprise couldn't, because that committee took a decision long before the Zondo things to investigate what is happening there in ESCOM and other public enterprise. And all these issues now are coming up to be under state capture. And government have instituted a commission with all the resources to go to the fine print of what is this state capture, which cut across even to us in parliament. So the Zondo Commission, what we want to do, colleagues, it doesn't stop us to call anyone. But I don't know this craziness about inquiries, as if the parliament can work, do its work without, because we've got the power. We started this thing in this committee. We're the first one. We started here. We've got the power to call, whether it's multi-choice, AN7, or Mzwandi Lemanyi, whoever. What is this craziness about? It must be inquired. We can sit and do deal with the person in that form. So, to me, Chair, all I'm saying is we have our program, and these are the things, because there's no way we can escape. You see, the SABC, we have not moved already. You see what has happened to MTDA. You see what is happening in FPB. And all these areas are precisely because of what we're trying to unravel and deal with. So to me, Chair, I agree with the letter. Let's send the letter to Speaker. We can ask that question to Speaker. We don't need to ask for why commit. When are we acting against those who misled the Parliament? Where are those people? When are we dealing with them? And even in this issue, we can say clearly, this is the issues there in outer. Can you explain to us, instead of instituting a route taken towards charging these people and removing them from parliament, you want to take a roundabout? It doesn't stop this committee, Chair. We can call anyone. We deal with these problems. But as I said, I want to repeat it. This issue is going again. Outa has presented the whole document to before that is going to be called and present the whole file document to that Zondo Commission. So to me, I let's do our work. Let's do whatever we want to do. Things which are simple are there. We still again want to go and investigate them instead of acting. That's what I can understand.
Okay.
So I agree with that. Let's write to the Speaker. The Speaker must be clear also to us. Let's write to the Speaker. And we ask Speaker, these are the outcomes. The report was presented in Parliament. We adopted on inquiry. This is outer. there the issues is a straight thing. It's like you tell me somebody is a spy in parliament, you steal secrets of government, you sell them to the German embassy. Yeah. Now you tell us you must make a, when the evidence is there, concrete, you want us to make an inquiry about that, put the processes of putting somebody to prison. We have the agencies dealing with that.
Thank you very much, comrades. The letter from the Deputy Speaker was based on outer report. An outer report in relation to Mutambi was talking about violation without those words. Outer report is talking about how Mutambi violated confidentiality of cabinet. They raise the issues of the emails and everything else. On the basis of that, we have debated this thing. We may not agree, all of us, but I think dominantly we say we write to the Speaker, and our response and decision of this meeting is that, Speaker, the matters that you raise, you instruct us to deal with matters of outer, and they fall within the ambit of ethics committee. Ethics committee must deal with this thing. Two, is that many issues emerged during the process of ad hoc committee. And there were recommendations. You'll recall, comrades, that in that ad hoc committee, the issues of multi-choice funder are there. The issues of ANN 7 are there. Even if it was, I mean, if you go through the report and recommendation, all those issues are there. What have we done in relation to those recommendations very clear from ad hoc, as that the office of the Speaker. So all those issues are there. But I think we agree that we then must write this letter that says these matters affect us as affect our work as Portfolio Committee on Communication. Can you give us progress on what you have done as the office of the Speaker? Full stop. And I think comrades will agree on that one, that even if you want inquiry, it's a repetition of the thing, decision is that let's refer that to the Speaker to instruct Ethics Committee. Let's write to the Speaker and check how far have they gone in terms of the recommendation. We agree that we look at all these things and agree on what issues will raise to member Mutambi if we decide to call him. Yeah. Because we must identify the issues first and then call her, because I think we do take that decision, but we must agree on issues that must come and answer here. He's an MP now, he's no longer member of cabinet. So I think this is what we say we must do. No, I've raised the issue of NN7 because it's part of that. But in terms of Ayila Sekanga, the meeting Ayila Sekanga, that meeting is coming immediately on our second term. No, the MDDA meeting is coming, the AN7 multi-choice thing, that meeting is coming. We cannot lose that one. And we agree on those. It's just that there were these priorities of the quarter two and all of that.
Okay.
Prioritize them and then we call those people.
Can I
later.
Then meet you halfway.
That you agree that you must take it to the...
I agree. No, I'm not going to agree on that. I agree that we write to the Speaker's office. I don't necessarily agree about the ethics office, but let's agree to disagree on that one. I'm happy that we're going to have that meeting that we'd all decided on with a multi-choice, ANN7, ICASA, and indeed Minister Mutami. So I think we are 75% in agreement.
Okay. Now, we, you know, that meeting, we never abandoned that meeting. It's just that, as you know, the program of the committee changes, prioritizes issues as Shwali Kaisha. So in our next term, those meetings are coming back.
Okay.
That's the agreement, honorable members. This afternoon or tomorrow morning, that letter will be on the speaker's desk. Thank you very much. The meeting is adjourned.
I'm going to greet you and say, just let me know that I am here.
Oh,